Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
You just popped in Kanye West. Get right for the summer workout tape.
Dr. Goldstein, what does this study tell us?
What it tells us is that if you look across the world, there's consistent evidence that physical activity has the capacity to prevent the onset of depression. Not for everybody, but disproportionately, higher activity leads to lower risk of depression. That's true across different continents, for men and for women, for old and young. And I think what's important to highlight from this study is that it was a combination of 49 prior studies with a total of over 250,000 participants. And so it's unlikely that it's by chance that we're observing this.
Do we know why exercise offers this protection from depression?
One of the interesting things about exercise is that it has a lot of effects. Biologically, it affects a number of systems in the brain and in the body. Psychologically, it leads to direct benefits in terms of boosts in energy and good feelings. And it also leaves us satisfied after the fact that we've done something good. And finally, it can influence the types of decisions we make about things we do in our life and the people we spend time with. And when you bring all of those things together, I think it explains why there's such a consistent benefit for exercise.
Is it something that people can do once they are depressed?
Absolutely. I think the main difference from the general population compared to people that have major depression is that for people with major depression, it's less likely that this will be sufficient to reduce their depression entirely. So generally speaking, people think about exercise as an add-on treatment in addition to a psychological or talking-based treatment or a medication.
For people who are depressed, it can be hard to get started. Do you have suggestions?
It's often hard, and I think some of the barriers are the symptoms themselves. People have an experience of a sense of futility or they have low energy. But there's also outside barriers that can be modified, and one of those is expectations around what exercise has as its core purpose. And I try to influence people to reduce their emphasis on weight and weight loss, and rather to look at exercise as something that's a long-term investment in health and something that has near-term benefits on their emotional well-being.
What would you recommend at an institutional level to get more Canadians moving?
I think the responsibilities for increasing physical activity and exercise lie with every Canadian or every person, really. And if you run an organization or are a CEO, then you have the opportunity to have benefits or to enable people to participate in more physical activity exercises during the workday. But there's also opportunities for people within work teams and as individuals to make decisions about how they spend time on their breaks. An example that I discussed recently was having walking meetings. So if there's a meeting of four or less people, oftentimes it doesn't have to be around a computer, and so people could choose to walk. They could take stairs when going to different areas of their facility or their building. And when you add that up across a period of time of a year, for example, you're talking about a substantial difference compared to purely sedentary decisions.
How important is it for us to be talking about this?
I think it's very important because it's one of those topics that there's been a couple of barriers to approaching exercise as medicine. And what I mean by that is, if I told you I have this medication that I'm going to prescribe for you for your depression, the level of rigor that I would have to go through Health Canada before I'm able to prescribe that to you is really remarkable. But when you talk about exercise, it's less commonly been applied in the top quality, double-blinded, randomized trials. And because of that, we don't really have as good knowledge about how to apply exercise as medicine. One of the benefits that could come from that type of research would be to figure out things such as dosing or who benefits from what types of exercise and that sort of question.
And so practical advice until we get that information, what would you say to people?
I'd say break it down into its component parts. What do you like doing in terms of intensity? Do you like long intervals with low or medium intensity? Do you find that sort of thing boring and would rather just go right at it and have a very intense interval of time? Both of these types of exercise are rather different, but they can contribute to increased physical fitness. And there's no evidence to suggest that one is better than the other in terms of reducing depression. So I would try to focus on what works for people in terms of duration. The other thing is in terms of what brings them enjoyment. Some people might really like a spinning class at their local gym. Other people might find that really socially anxiety-provoking. Some people might really like the run on their own. Others find it boring. And so the question is for the individual, what do you like? What can you see yourself sustaining for a long period of time?
Thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
Van Dong. No parent ever mentioned Bandung to me. No teacher ever mentioned Bandung to me. No religious leader has ever mentioned Bandung to me. No one has, unless one recalls the voice of Malcolm X, the black nationalist leader of the movement, 60s. Malcolm X, in his recorded speeches, speaks of how America's attack against black life and black rights led to a black revolution around the world. And I think to inspire black people and to convince them that they were not alone, Malcolm spoke of countries from Asia and Africa, newly independent countries, getting together to create a separate, non-aligned body to serve the needs of these newly emergent nations and their peoples and cultural, economic, and technical affairs. What a surprise to hear of Bandung again, over 50 years later. In 1956, the black American expatriate, Richard Wright, publishes The Color Curtain, a deep examination of the Asian-African conference in Bandung, Indonesia. Here we see Wright's allegiance to psychiatry and psychology as a way into one's hidden drives and unspoken motivations. And this adoption of the science of the mind, Wright seemingly dumps political analysis for psychic or psychological analysis, or the outside for the inside. Instead of analyzing classes, Wright looks to religion and race as keys to identity. And he saw the Bandung Conference as a convocation of the world's dispossessed peoples who turned from communism as well as capitalism to follow the road called non-alignment. When Wright first learned of the Bandung Conference, he was stunned by the sheer size of the populations to be represented there: China, India, Indonesia, Japan, Ethiopia, the Gold Coast, the Philippines, some 29 nations in all. He told his wife he had to go, and when she asked him why, he passed her the newspaper article. Upon reading it, she exclaimed, "Why, that's the human race." And so it was. But nations are nations, and they rarely yield the iron chains of sovereignty. Bandung, a dream, rarely reached its enormous potential. Can it do so now, in this new century, threatened by rapacious capitalism under the guise of neocolonialism? The West wants to chain the world's majority to its systems of repression and restriction. Can the world, the human race, raise again the banner of self-determination, liberation, and freedom? Can Bandung give rise to a new world power based on the overwhelming majority of the world's people? Can Africa and Asia emerge as whole societies again? This we shall find out. Whether the dream of Malcolm and our dream can become a reality. From imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
DC is well known for its canine culture as dog parks take over the city and rapidly gentrifying neighborhoods, but one story from New York puts anything I've seen in Washington to absolute shame. According to the New York Post, a group known as the Dog Owners of Tribeca basically hijacked the public park for their own purposes and got away with it for an entire decade. These privileged scofflaws decided to start charging annual fees for membership and enforcing 22 whole rules that they had for the park. They even put a lock on the gate that you couldn't get access to unless your dues were up to date. The audacity of this maneuver is almost impossible to overstate. Dog owners tend to take themselves too seriously, we all know this, but to occupy an actual taxpayer-paid facility in order to make your own money from it and exercise power in some weird fiefdom is beyond ridiculous. They claim that the neglect from the city forced their hand to do this, but some members didn't even know the facility wasn't private. It all just proves, once again, we don't deserve dogs. I'm Clinton Yates, and that's my take.
The rulers, the rulers, rulers of the world, of the world. Every hood, every hood, stand up, stand up, every street, stand up, and be accountable, be accountable. Yeah.
Damn, Loki, where the hell you find this one?
And now we in the club like, hey, flashing, hey, light, light, hey, flashing, hey, light,
hey, light. Yeah, you heard that news.
Sunglasses, black tee, man. Red carpet, all cameras on me, man. But the cameras can't see what I see, man. Why I had to treat the haters like fleas, man. Motherfuckers wanna talk about me, man. I check the ice and I brush off my sleeve, man. I'm too high up to have dirt on my shoulder. Lyrics from heaven, church, thought I told you.
Tasha told Kim that Lisa said Mike said Kale's doing drugs now, man. He a crackhead.
Y'all mean to tell me y'all believe that?
The musician R. Kelly has been accused of sexual abuse, child pornography, even running a kind of sex cult. But he has still managed to stay one of the most popular R&B singers in the world. Now, the Time's Up movement is circulating an open letter asking the entertainment industry to stop doing business with R. Kelly, and it's generating a whole lot of support. For more, we've got Rodney Carmichael in our studios. He writes about hip-hop for NPR Music. Hey, Rodney.
Hey, Rachel, how you doing?
I'm doing well. So this has been a long time coming, hasn't it?
Yeah, the Me Too movement is helping to elevate this cause that, you know, people have been putting public pressure on R. Kelly for years about this.
Yeah.
But last year, two black women in Atlanta, Kenyette Barnes and Orinike Odeleye, started an online campaign. They hashtagged it Mute R. Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And they successfully got 10 R. Kelly concerts canceled in different cities across
wow.
the country. Yeah. So, you know, now you have people like Tom Joyner who are joining, which is really big deal because he's a huge syndicated radio host. And he says he's not going to play R. Kelly's music anymore.
Huh.
You
Ava
got
DuVernay.
Ava DuVernay.
Shonda Rhimes.
Shonda Rhimes. Questlove. John Legend. All of these people are signing on in support of this letter and really hoping to gain enough momentum to get R. Kelly's record label and streaming services like Spotify and Apple to stop supporting.
Wow. So has R. Kelly responded to any of this?
Okay. So his lawyer put out a statement calling the campaign unjust and off target. He also calls it the attempted public lynching of a black man. And this is the same language that Bill Cosby's publicist used last week to describe his conviction. And obviously, you know, Clarence Thomas notoriously used same loaded language when he was faced with sexual harassment allegations from Anita Hill back
right.
in the day.
What's that about?
Well, it's not good. You know, it's not the kind of metaphor that should be used in these circumstances. And it really comes at an odd time because just last week, you know, we had a new memorial dedicated in honor of real lynching victims in this country.
Right.
So it really kind of just muddies everything that, you know, these black people have died for and were persecuted for.
I mean, it has to be said, R. Kelly's had a really complicated relationship with his audience, even with people who love him for
a
long time.
It's been complicated for a long time. R. Kelly has been responsible for so many hits over the last 25 years within R&B and pop. You cannot go to a black family reunion to this day, I know because I went to one last year, without the DJ playing Step in the Name of Love, and it's really awkward.
Yeah.
You know, but there's also a lot of African-Americans who really detest R. Kelly and what they feel like he represents and are hopeful that the public sentiment might finally be starting to turn on him. People are really concerned that his victims have been black women who are not rich or famous. And it feels like it's taken a lot more effort to get people to care about it and pay attention to it because of that.
Right. Because the Me Too movement was so much. We saw so many like high profile white women.
Exactly. Exactly.
White abusers. And this is different.
Yeah. I mean, it's also important to note that, you know, right now, this is still just a letter, as important as it is.
Yeah.
He's gotten off in a court of law before. So in terms of justice, the supporters of this campaign are seeking, there might still be a long way to go.
Rodney Carmichael, he writes about hip hop for NPR Music. Hey, Rodney, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rachel.
Seattle's a great place to visit because it has, I guess you could say, a little bit of everything, but I like to think of it as a lot of everything.
The former foster son of Seattle's ex-mayor, Ed Murray, sued the city today. The suit filed by Jeff Simpson says Murray improperly used his position as mayor to defame him while battling the sex abuse scandal last year. KUOW's Patricia Murphy reports.
Ed Murray resigned as mayor of Seattle in September. The lawsuit filed in King County Superior Court says Murray knowingly and recklessly slandered Simpson and other men who came forward to accuse the mayor of sexually abusing them. The suit says Murray and his husband repeatedly said the accusations were the work of right-wing anti-gay activists. It also says Murray called Simpson untrustworthy because of his criminal history. In December, the city agreed to pay accuser Delvin Heckard $150,000 to settle his claim of abuse. Heckard died of an accidental overdose in February. In a statement, the city attorney says the office had yet to review the complaint. Attorneys for Simpson and Murray did not immediately return calls for comment. I'm Patricia Murphy, KUOW News.
Say that the incident is being investigated as a battery and hate crime case. Witnesses, and no doubt the victim, say that they found it very disturbing to hear this man repeatedly call the woman the N-word. We do want to warn you that the video is hard to watch.
Now get the f*** out of here and let people move. Who the f*** do you think you are?
A violent confrontation in the Santa Monica College Performing Arts Center parking lot Tuesday night is caught on cell phone video. It starts out as a verbal altercation over a parking spot and then escalates into physical violence.
Get out of here. He's not
worth it. I'm not moving. Get the out of here.
We've had to bleep out several words because the man is repeatedly heard calling the woman racial slurs. And the two toss many four-letter words back and forth. College student Enrique Conde was on his way to music class when the confrontation broke out.
And right away, here are these racial slurs and expletives being shouted.
Santa Monica College police tell us the man in the video is 80-year-old Frederick Scheinrock of Los Angeles. He was there to attend an opera at the Broad Stage Theater. Both the theater crowd and music students have to share parking when there's a performance, and oftentimes there's not enough parking. They say Scheinrock became upset with the woman for parking over the line. And when she was in the process of correcting that, Shine Rock began lashing out at her. Enrique says the woman is a fellow music student.
If someone is not parked very well, then, you know, that's one parking spot lost to another person, and that's how I believe it started.
Police say they arrested Shine Rock for battery on school property. The incident is being handled as a hate crime. Shine Rock was cited and released and due in court in June.
That was a deeply sad moment, I think, for everybody who was out there.
And police tell us that the woman was checked out by paramedics at the scene and is said to be doing all right. Now, as for Shine Rock, I did speak with him tonight, but he refused to comment on the case. For now, reporting live here in Santa Monica, Mary Beth McDade. We'll send it back to you guys in the studio.
Why haven't you learned anything?
New at 10, a school's African-American display disrespected with racist graffiti. Boston 25 News reporter Drew Corritis is live in Wayland, where that display was just put up on Sunday. And Drew, the school's still trying to track down the people responsible.
Yeah, Vanessa, administrators tell us they're focus on figuring out who scribbled this racist slur in three different places. They're also encouraging students and parents to express what their feelings about why this happened and what can be done to prevent it from happening again.
It really, like, upset me, obviously. I think a lot of people that I know were surprised.
Inside the walls of Wayland High School, students describe hurt following the hate etched in marker across a milestone of progress.
People think Wayland is above this kind of thing and that prejudice and racial bias doesn't happen here, when it's obviously not the case.
A realization senior Savannah Solitsky believes others should recognize. The target of the racist remarks in her school, a timeline tunnel display depicting Wayland African American history, set up just this past Sunday in celebration of its 50th anniversary of participation with METGO, a voluntary busing program that allows inner city Boston students to attend school here.
But some of the METCO students that I have talked to about it, they were less surprised. They're definitely sad and really angry, but they said this stuff goes unnoticed a lot.
Administrators say it certainly is out in the open after the vandalism that happened on Tuesday morning.
A student had written in marker the N-word in a couple different places. This is not a community where hate speech is okay.
The hate speech that found its way here, Superintendent Arthur Yunovsky tells us, was removed right away, but hasn't been erased from a conversation he hopes will continue.
I think that there's a lot of eagerness on the part of staff and students to face this honestly and say that we're against it.
And the superintendent telling us, unfortunately, there are no surveillance cameras in the hallway where this happened. He tells us 137 students take the bus here to Wayland daily through the METCO program. We're live in Wayland tonight. Drew Caritas, Boston 25 News.
My mama was raised in the era when clean water was only served to the fairer skin.
We begin right now at 6 with the story of three D.C. high school students who are reaching for the stars. But racial attacks almost stole their shine.
These three young women are finalists in a NASA contest, but when they started promoting this project on social media, the comments turned ugly.
So new at 6, Delia Gonsalves tells us about their project and why they're still smiling despite all the haters.
Wait till you meet these girls. They were super impressive, and they really make a great team. They want to help people through this project with something as basic and as necessary as water, and were inspired by some of their own drinking fountains here at the school.
We've had to have some of our water fountains being closed because of the lead issue, so we wanted to create a water filtration system that would purify impure water found in water fountains in public schools.
So Miss Marissa, our coach from IN3, she introduced us to the project around November, and we were all interested because we all want to focus on STEM. African American young girls and women of color are underrepresented in this industry, so we wanted to, you know, really focus on making sure that we, you know, promote ourselves and show other young girls that you can do it.
So Michaela's one tweet was retweeted more than 2,000 times, and that's when the haters showed up and the racial attacks began.
People said you were soliciting for votes for nominations because simply that you were three African American women. Was that true at all?
No.
Were they hurtful statements?
We just decided to just, like, you know, not worry about that and just remain positive and just keep smiles on our faces because everything about this is a great experience.
So what's the bigger picture here for you?
Our goal is to get to NASA, hopefully, and just do more collaborations with them and
hopefully we will be able to implement our project into public schools in D.C., and hopefully it will just spread around the world and we will help thousands of people get clean water.
And they just might be one step closer to some of those goals, now with a grant from the mayor for $4,000. Delia Gonsalves, WUSA 9.
Three young ladies are role models. Should add them over to my house, tutor my girls. NASA stopped the online voting process because the system was tampered with as a result of all the negative feedback. The winners of the contest will be announced in the coming weeks.
The first thing we're going to do to, I think, stop racism is stop focusing on racism.
There are allegations being made over the firing of the coach, who is also a history teacher, and they include issues about race. Good evening, everyone. I'm Yuki Washington.
I'm Jessica Dean. Eyewitness News reporter Alicia Nieves is live outside Camden Catholic High School in Cherry Hill with more. Alicia.
Well, Yuki and Jess, we have been told by the Diocese of Camden that it is looking into allegations that this coach's firing may have been racially motivated, not by his race, he is a white man, but by the race of some of his players. Controversy at this Catholic high school in South Jersey after the school's head football coach has just been fired.
I don't care what they do. I come out here to make a statement for my coach.
Players and parents protested today in light of the firing and in light of allegations that the school's administration may have fired Coach Nick Strom over the number of minority players on his team.
You need to open your mind up to different things. It could be even your prejudice issues. It may not be all of you, but you need to open your mind up to all the kids that are here, whether it be white, black, like any ethnicity that you are. It's just we want to be one community.
Camden Catholic High School issued a statement to us today denying the allegations, calling them, quote, baseless. And we did receive a copy of the letter the school issued to the coach for his, quote, non-renewal. It cites issues like a professional dress code violation, wearing sneakers instead of dress shoes, and confronting another teacher in front of students.
I think this is all to cover up the fact that they can't say what the problem is.
Tyrone Belford is the former high school football coach of Coach Nick Strom, and he's a mentor to him as well. He says the accusations against the school's administration are not baseless, that Coach Strom has confided in him several times over the past year.
In one of our conversations, he says, it seems the administration is kind of pushing me, you know, and about the number of minority students I have coming in here. And he talked to me about several instances where he thought that where some minority students were disciplined, and they were expelled or let go from the school, and in one occasion there was a white student who did something he wasn't, and he, you know, but that's an
so
administration.
He has serious concerns.
And we spoke to several family members of Nick Strom who say they met with the coach after the protest here earlier today. And they say right now the coach is not really concerned about his career. In the end, he feels he's going to be okay. He is worried about the future of minority students at this school. Live in Cherry Hill, Alicia Nieves, CBS 3 Eyewitness News.
All right, Alicia, thank you.
Kimberly Minkle has raised five boys, but she's never had to deal with anything like this. She's keeping her son Isaiah home from school indefinitely after an incident on Monday.
I'm keeping him home because I feel it's unsafe for him to go back to school.
Isaiah says he was in class at Cascade Middle School when another student stabbed him in the arm six times with a pen.
Here and then here.
Going through a sweatshirt, breaking the skin, and drawing blood.
As a mother, to watch this, it's heartbreaking.
Because I just feel scared. I feel like he's going to threaten me again.
Isaiah is on the autism spectrum. He's quiet, shy, and has a hard time expressing himself. He says this all started when the two boys were joking around, but things grew ugly when he was called the N-word and others joined in.
I felt uncomfortable every time they would say it. Yeah.
And then the stabbing happened.
Yeah, and the stabbing happened.
And then more racial slurs after.
Yeah.
So this isn't just a one-time thing.
The doctor actually was quite shocked.
Isaiah was seen by a doctor, and his mom does plan to press charges. She says the boy who assaulted Isaiah is still in school, and administrators have advised both boys to go through racial sensitivity counseling. But Kimberly doesn't think that goes far enough, given the racial tensions in this country and violence in our schools. She's not letting her son return to school until she's convinced he's safe.
It starts with a pen one day, it goes to a knife the next day, and then someone brings a gun to school and we have a school shooting.
In Cedro Woolley, Eric Wilkinson, King 5 News.
Cedra Woolley, superintendent of schools, says the department is taking this situation seriously and will work with the family toward a solution.
Meanwhile, the DEA teamed up with the CCA. They try and lock people up. They try and make new slaves. See, that's their property on prison. Get your peace today.
DNA testing kits like 23andMe, it turns out, are more like 23andMe and you and police officers and members of the intelligence community. News that the Golden State Killer suspect was caught by using a genealogy website is thrilling law enforcement officials and alarming privacy advocates who are realizing that people who submit DNA for testing are unwittingly becoming genetic informants. Joining us to talk about this, Ronnie Jackson is stepping down as Trump's physician, and other medical headlines, Art Kaplan, Arts of Doctors William F. and Virginia Connolly Mitty Chair and the Director of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. He's also the co-host of the Everyday Ethics podcast. Hey there, Art Kaplan.
Hello, hello.
And hello, hello.
So, Art, would you, I don't know if you're with me on this, I am going to propose that the Golden State Killer's name be changed to the Cambridge Analytica Killer. Do you think that would be appropriate? So, one, I'm upset. Emily Rooney and I don't know if Marjorie are obsessed with this case, number one. Number two, when I read this DNA stuff, which you're going to describe to us, to say it gave me the creeps. The good news, of course, is it helped them find this killer and rapist from decades ago. The bad news is, well, pretty obvious. Why don't you fill us in?
So there is, there are a lot of folks who've sent off their DNA. This is the sort of spit in a cup and send it off to a company, find out whether you're Lithuanian, or some companies say they can get you a match, a date based on your DNA. Pause here for hilarious laughter. Others want to match up your diet to your DNA. Continued laughter. I don't think any of that works either. I'm not even sure the ancestry stuff is all that accurate, but let's put that on the side. What companies are doing is they're hooking you into a fun recreational thing, send us your DNA, and then they put all the DNA information from different people in a big database, and they keep it. They don't get rid of it, and then they often resell it to third parties. But they have the big database sitting there, and in this instance, one of the databases was searched by the cops because they had DNA from the crime site on this Golden State Killer, which was way back in the 70s, I guess.
And 70s, so they 90s, began
to, so they looked at that DNA, and then they began to search. I don't know why they picked this particular one, but they went there, and they didn't have a warrant, and they didn't get it reviewed by a judge or anything like that. They just started fishing around in the database looking for people who might match, and they kept slowly finding more and more matches, ultimately narrowed it down to sort of a person near Sacramento, California, which is where a lot of these crimes took place, not all of them. And then they said, you know, we got a suspect, and let's hang around his house, and when he throws out a coffee cup or a Kleenex or something, we'll grab some of his DNA, which they did. Just a reminder that your DNA is pretty easy to get because it's slathered over a lot of things that we touch or drink from and that sort of thing. And lo and behold, they get a match, and lo and behold, that led them to then go and arrest this guy, and he appears to be the guy. So it was a big search of a database where a lot of people have unthinkingly sent their DNA off, you know, kind of, I wonder if I'm Estonian.
Well, how upset? I mean, there are two sides of the story. They wouldn't have found the guy had it not been for this.
If you don't want, you know, people to be using your DNA, you don't ship it off to some company and you have no idea what they're going to do with it.
Well, if you don't want Donald Trump to be using the data that you put on Facebook, then don't go on Facebook.
Exactly. I mean,
it's not exactly. You should have a certain right to protect your own information.
I think it's crazy. We put all this stuff out in the internet, and then we're surprised when somebody finds it and uses it. I mean, I think we have to face reality.
By the way, just to make the link between Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and all that stuff, why should we be surprised? It's the business model. They resell it.
That's true.
What they do. There's a little tiny type thing that says, hey, glad to have you on Facebook. And by the way, we'll do whatever we want with your data. See ya. You know, I mean, it's buried in there, but it's there.
So wait. So if I had, let's assume I used 23andMe and WGBH decided when I'm renewing my health insurance that they wanted to buy the database.
There you go.
Could they legally, by the way, they wouldn't, but could they legally?
Find the 277 MRIs and say, huh, maybe this guy has an issue.
First of all, they wouldn't. Exactly. They don't need to do that because they can find you prone in any particular diagnostic clinic anywhere in the greater.
Well, that may be true. It may not be. So yeah. I'm serious. Could they get access to my stuff?
Yes. And what the database is it's they say, the company says, 23andMe or whoever says, look, we de-identify that data. It's they still somebody may want to buy it. But it doesn't say your name or it doesn't connect to you. But the problem is you can reverse engineer. If I have the database and I bought it and then I start to correlate it like the cops did with other things that I know I may have records on, say your credit card use, or I may have records on your cell phone whereabouts and so on, I can then usually figure out who's who. It may take me a while and it takes a little science, but it can be done. So that's the problem. Even if they
screwed.
Say... we're selling it anonymously. Yeah. So here's the other thing. Some people say, well, why don't we put more notice on the DNA things and say, you know, we resell this and it could be accessed by the DA and the Massachusetts State Police and the intelligence services and ICE and who knows. You could do it. But what I think would be better, make more sense, is to say no one can go in those databases without what we did see with Donald Trump and his now admitted lawyer, Michael Cohen, in the Stormy Daniels affair. Remember, they raided Michael Cohen's apartment or hotel room
and apartment and office. Yeah.
Yeah. And they yanked up his records. But what did they have to do to get in there? They needed to go to a federal judge, get a warrant, and then there's a special master who sits around and makes sure that what they're looking at is
not protected by attorney-client privilege.
That's what you need in the database thing. You need a legal process to get in there. I'm not against finding killers, in fact, with DNA analysis. That's great. Go tell a judge and then have somebody sit there and make sure that what they're looking at doesn't violate any individual's rights. We don't have a procedure. That's what's missing here.
Could you talk faster? Because I got to get out of here and cancel my doctor's appointments for the rest of this week. We're talking art.
We have to go back to being Luddites, Jim. I think it's the
only
way to go.
And wipe those microphones down, you two. Wipe those microphones. There's DNA all over those.
I said, sorry, Your Honor, if I was too arrogant. That money was staggering. They locked me PC with them trainees and rats. Man, that shit was embarrassing. 23 hours of cell by myself. Man, you couldn't imagine it. They fed me some shit I won't feed to my dog. Man, that shit was the nastiest. Can you imagine me losing my mind? Throwing push-up 52 at a time. Do the whole deck just to get through the time, just to get to my son and get back to my mom. Because Poppy keep asking me, where am I at? I told him in jail, and I said I'd be back. He said, when you back, can you get me from school? Shit like that there turned boy.
Yeah, what do you guys make of who's the kid who just got out of prison? And they've been flying him all around.
Oh, Meek Mill.
You Meek know, Mill.
Meek
yeah.
Mill.
I mean, and even Robert Crow, I mean, I don't get this. You know,
you're not alone.
This guy, they're embracing this guy, Robert Kraft. I mean, same guy as boycotting, you know, blackballing Colin Kaepernick. These guys are like, you know, covering up to, you know.
I think it's Kaepernick guilt, especially from Kraft. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, you're one of the guys that refuses to sign Kaepernick. When people mention his name in these meetings, as we saw, you just go silent. You act like you didn't hear. What Eric Reed had to say. Eric Reed went in there, by the way, wearing a Kaepernick T-shirt over his shirt and tie. Okay, so he wasn't playing, right?
Right.
So, but
right.
You know, obviously they were, you know. So there's you can, as Otis said earlier, that's probably you know why he's not playing.
Well, yeah,
why they're not signing him. Right. They saw that T-shirt, they were like, oh hell.
Yeah, they're looking at each other like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Okay, we know it's.
Right.
Bob Kraft actually went to visit Meek Mill in prison and said, and I quote, "Amazing young man. I know how I'd feel if I was in the situation he's in. He is." And then he said, every time, quote, "every time I see him, I just come away more impressed. He's very intelligent. That makes it clear to me that we have to do something with criminal justice reform," end quote. That's Bob Kraft's statement. However, signing Colin Kaepernick, nothing was said in that room with players and owners.
And don't get me wrong, Meek Mill, I'm glad he's out.
Right.
No question about it. He, you know, the system. He was one of those guys who was done wrong by the system. He had a gun charge when he was 19.
Mm-hmm.
Got probation for 10 years, so they keep you in the system. He's now 30, and now he commits a small crime, and they try to put him back in there for a number of years.
Right.
But there's a hashtag out. The hashtag used to be Free Meek, and now there's a hashtag Free Them All. So I'm Free Them All. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's not just about Meek Mill. There's so many more guys that go through stuff like this. And like you said, it's just funny to see these rich white owners, gather, crowd around Meek Mill and act like, they're trying to help somebody out.
Flying them to all the games.
Right. Pick him up. It was like a movie. It was like,
Didn't he fly him to the Sixers game or something? It was like a mob movie or something.
Yeah. Like, they pick him up from jail and fly him to the game. He's sitting in front row.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious?
Meek Mill has
and meanwhile, Kaepernick can't get a tryout?
I say, fuck the police, that's how I treat them. We bought our way out of jail, but we can't buy freedom.
So Stephen Clark, as you may remember, was fatally shot and killed by Sacramento police officers. And even though he was not armed, there are some conflicting videos and evidence that suggests that this may have been unnecessary for other reasons as well. Now, there are contradicting reports on how many shots Stephen Clark was hit with, as well as where those shots entered his body. Now, the Sacramento coroner's report states that Clark was hit 3 times in the back and 7 times total, but the Clark family actually hired an independent investigator who states that the total number of shots was actually 8, and 6 of those shots were fired on his back. Now, this is important because the difference in opinion here has a lot to bear on any future case, and the Clark family is expected to file a civil suit. Now, I want you to take a look at some of the graphics here to illustrate where the shots may have been. Now, it's hard to tell from this, but one of the things that has happened more recently is that the private investigator released a photograph. We won't release the photograph due to its graphic nature, but he stated this of the photo. Experts may have different opinions, but a picture is a picture. A picture does not have an opinion.
Yeah, they're saying essentially, look, I don't care what these bought and paid for coroners are saying, mm-hmm. who are trying to support a certain narrative. In this case, the argument goes, right, that it's supporting a law enforcement narrative. So that would mean that most of the shots are in the front, right? The more shots that are in the back, the more law enforcement is on thin ice. It's like, why did you shoot a guy who's running away from you?
Right.
In other words, there's no threat to you if he's running away from you, is the thinking. So in essence, that's why that the private investigator released those photos that they're damning. The cops keep the narrative going about how there's a threat to their lives, and that's really and really that's what's underpinning the whole law enforcement story.
Well, it's what should tell you a lot is the way that the police story continues to change consistently. So that's always the question, which is whose story is remaining consistent and whose story changes. And we've already seen this multiple times, the fact that the police have in different cities, like most recently in Brooklyn, have been charged with lying about finding a gun in an apartment. And then last year, there's a whole series of investigations around cops planting fake evidence in traffic stops that were caught on tape. So this is not too inconsistent with how law enforcement has treated mostly Black folks. And it should be said that Dr. Bennett Amalu, and we've talked about this before concerning the Stephon Clark case, comes from a very reputable background. He was the pathologist who was able to identify the brain injuries that led to the brain injuries in NFL players that led to a huge investigation and even a big Hollywood film around this topic. So his story has stayed the same. And I hope that the press isn't won over with the consistently morphing story of the police department. And, Malu said some really interesting things, which was that the coroners did not take the spinal cord out, which would have been necessary. It would have been tricky, but it would have been necessary to really assess the damages to the body. And the fact that when he flipped over the body, he also saw the shots to the back, which again, they could have missed in their first account as well. So, you know, I kind of trust the guy who has a long background in history in this work, and also who, I mean, yes, he was hired as a private investigator, I mean, as a private pathologist, but, you know, he really has a lot more credibility than the police department.
Yeah, I think in this particular case, too, and in many cases, what is unfortunate is that the coroner's office will typically perform an autopsy, and in performing that autopsy and gathering evidence, body parts are removed, things are changed, holes are poked into the body. Like, it becomes something that it wasn't in its original form after the incident. And when we have private investigators and pathologists, scientists taking a look at bodies during the second round, it can lead to a lot of discrepancies and perhaps errors. So that makes it a bit complicated. I think that that's something that will definitely be discussed more. But I think you're right that the narrative here is what's important. And regardless of whether it was three shots or six shots in the back, I think when we look at the footage, it's clear that some of this violence may have been completely unnecessary.
And the DA there has a lot of questions about her reluctance to bring forth a prosecution. She has a lot of law enforcement money flowing into her campaign. And so that is something that Anne-Marie Schubert's her name. She's a friend of law enforcement, and so reluctant to bring any charges is the argument against these law enforcement officers. And that argument's backed up with a lot of evidence of law enforcement monies flowing into her campaign. So there is more than just some confusion about this. It would appear that there is money affecting this entire narrative as well. I say, fuck
the police. A scandal in California's Central Valley could change how officials investigate sudden, suspicious, or violent deaths. In 49 out of 58 counties, that job falls to a coroner who is also an elected sheriff. Critics say that's an inherent conflict of interest, especially when someone dies at the hands of law enforcement. Julie Small of member station KQED and NPR's Criminal Justice Team reports.
San Joaquin County landed in the national spotlight recently when its chief forensic pathologist quit. Dr. Bennett Omalu, renowned for his expertise on concussions, accused the sheriff coroner there of pressuring him to change autopsy findings in cases involving officers of the law.
He said to me, "My opinion does not matter to him and does not mean anything in his office, and that I must do what he orders me to do."
He's talking about Sheriff Coroner Steve Moore. Moore denies he did anything wrong. Legally, he says he has the final say on any death investigation.
"I believe I did what I was supposed to do under the law, okay? Both that and my interpretation as far as what my duty is as the coroner."
In California, those duties are pretty clear. Even if a forensic pathologist says someone was beaten to death, say a homicide, the sheriff coroner can call it an accident. And that's where the conflict is for the counties with this kind of system. Take the case of 47-year-old Daniel Lee Humphreys. In 2008, Humphreys crashed his motorcycle in the city of Stockton when he was being chased by California Highway Patrol for speeding. As he got up, the CHP officer shot him with a taser 31 times. Humphreys collapsed and later died.
"It was preventable, and it was so excessive, and then for nothing to be done."
That's Barbara Stewart, Humphreys' ex-wife. She used to work for the sheriff. She says the sheriff's department withheld evidence of the taser use. Without that information, Humphreys' death was ruled an accident. The taser report only surfaced when Stewart and her two daughters sued the state for wrongful death. The family settled for $1 million. She regrets that.
"Money doesn't replace a person. It doesn't fix the wrong."
A recent audit of the San Joaquin County Coroner's Office found at least four deaths in 2016 that involved law enforcement, where the sheriff overruled the findings of county pathologists. Randy Hanslick, a retired forensic expert, has studied the sheriff coroner system. He knows of just a handful of states and cities that combine the two offices, mostly to save money.
"I think the downside, basically, is either a perceived or a real conflict in the goals of the two entities."
And that's the crux of the debate, whether a sheriff can be trusted to fairly investigate officer-involved deaths. Hanslick says nationally there's still a reluctance to call those deaths homicides, but people shouldn't be afraid of that term because it can lead to the truth about what happened.
"If we just call these accidents, and ignore any intent or volitional acts, there may not be as thorough investigation as there might have otherwise been into the circumstances of that death.
This isn't the first time a California sheriff has been accused of abusing power in death investigations, but the controversy in San Joaquin County has prompted state lawmakers to introduce a bill to bring changes. It would require some counties to replace the coroner with a medical examiner, similar to the setup in San Diego and San Francisco. In those places, a physician certified in forensic pathology investigates deaths independent of law enforcement. San Joaquin County officials took it upon themselves to go ahead and make the change. In a stunning rebuke, supervisors voted unanimously to strip the sheriff of his coroner duties and install a medical examiner within a year. For NPR News, I'm Julie Small in Stockton, California.
Damn, these niggas got me. I hate these niggas more than I got.
There have been developments in the case against the man, one of the people who assaulted a black man during the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. You probably have seen the video of what happened in that parking structure. There is a new development. Jacob Scott Goodwin, a 23-year-old from Arkansas, was found guilty of malicious wounding charge. The jury of three men and nine women recommended 10 years imprisonment with the option of a suspended sentence, along with a $20,000 fine and rehabilitation plan for Goodwin. His sentence will be set by a judge on August 23rd. For those of you who don't remember, here's a tweet from that moment. This is the image that really was indelible. There are multiple people who were assaulting him. The man's name is DeAndre Harris. He's 20 years old, former special ed teacher who was at the event and got caught up in all the things. And one of the men who beat him up is going to go to jail. What do you guys think?
Good. It's not any more nuanced than that.
Right, exactly.
Like, what else do you say to this? Good. It was premeditated. He showed up to the protest fully guarded,
right,
ready to do battle. So it wasn't like he was caught off guard, that he was, you know, taken by surprise. This person came to do business of harm to other people there. So, again, I can't be any more nuanced than good. You know, that's the screwing you did, the screwing you get for the screwing you did.
Yeah,
it's all. You're exactly right. He's in militia gear, and he was ready to ride, and that's that was a good night out for him. You know,
yeah,
he got his shot, and it was it's nauseating. You know,
right.
So yeah, that the justice system was able to come to some kind of moderately satisfying conclusion on this.
Right.
I mean, you wish it wouldn't happen. That's why I'm being halting about it. Because like, why are we even? Why did this thing happen?
But is it weird that I'm thinking? I see so many incidents of violence where the person doesn't even get charges. Yes, a lot of the times it's police officers, but like nothing ends up happening. Now you're actually seeing some justice get done, period.
You're seeing it because there's video of it. I think if this had not had video accompanying it, you wouldn't see justice done.
Right. We have we don't have a graphic for this, but I did pull a quote from a Washington Post article about the actual process of justice getting meted out. They said the jury watched multiple videos of the attack from different vantage points, showing Goodwin hitting Harris with a shield and kicking him while he was on the ground. Other men join in, hitting Harris with a board and a large pole. When Harris managed to get up, they yelled obscenities at him, telling him, get out. And when you watch the video, I just remember seeing, like, there are so many people around here who aren't participating, but there were like four or five other cameras in every shot you see, people getting up there, and you're thinking, like, if there's no justice wrought out as a result of this, like, where are we going to find it? So
sure.
I'm glad it happened. There is more. The other people who were involved in the beating, it has been reported a trial for another man charged in the Harris attack, Alex Michael Ramos of Georgia, is set to begin Wednesday. The trial for the other two, Tyler Watkins Davis and of Florida and Daniel Borden of Ohio, will begin this summer. By the way, DeAndre Harris was actually arrested. The guy who was beaten, mm-hmm, was himself actually arrested and, you know, put through the legal process for after being arrested. He was kind of the trial. He was acquitted already. So the process of justice continues for the other people, but his has already been opened and shut very quickly. And this was one of those things where they didn't know who it was. They just had the videos. And it took from August when this went down to October for a warrant to be issued for the arrest of the individuals involved.
Strange fruit hanging
apple trees.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, peace, Gus. Can I please do 5-10 seconds of silence for the brothers in Oklahoma City that was murdered and depend upon? Can I do 5 seconds for them, brothers? And just in memory of them.
Are new and disturbing details about what happened to two more murder victims after they were shot and killed. Court documents reveal their bodies were dismembered at an Oklahoma City property. News 9's Christy Lewis spoke with family today. She's live on the story at the Oklahoma County Courthouse tonight. Christy?
Kelly, the search warrants filed here show the long list of items police found at that property, including multiple kinds of saws and cleaning supplies. For the last 2 weeks, two families have been hurting.
Alizé was loved. Very much so.
Along with those close to 21-year-old Alizé Smith and 21-year-old Jerron Moreland. Court documents say they were shot and killed in a van outside of this crest at 12th and Eastern in Moore on April 14th. According to an affidavit, 16-year-old Brett Botler pulled the trigger and his brother, Kevin Garcia Botler, sped out of the parking lot to this OKC property where Johnny Barker helped sink the bodies in a pond. When police located them days later, it was found the bodies had been dismembered.
I will not get to see my only son ever again. Not only was he taken, I cannot even bury him the proper way.
Alizé's mother has her own thoughts about the motive.
A hate crime and awful, and those people are murderers.
District Attorney Greg Mashburn says his office looked into the possibility of this being a hate crime, and he says the investigation showed the victims of the homicide were attempting to rob the suspects when the shooting occurred. Therefore, it was determined that the motive was not race-related. Meantime, both Botlers are behind bars, along with Barker, also facing charges connected to the case.
They absolutely do not have the right to walk outside of those bars, ever. And they will burn in hell for what they done.
Now, the Cleveland County DA has also filed a charge against the suspect's mother in connection to this case. Live on the scene on the story, Christy Lewis, News.
God showed me the way. The devil's trying to break me down. The only thing that I pray is that my feet don't fail me now.
Well, we spend the rest of the hour looking at the life and legacy of the founder of Black Liberation Theology, Reverend Dr. James Cone. Starting in the 1960s, he argued for racial justice and interpreted the Christian gospel from the experience of the oppressed. He said he was inspired by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who gave Black theology its Christian identity, and Malcolm X, who gave Black theology its Black identity. Dr. Cone died Saturday at the age of 81. This is part of an address he gave in 1971 at the University of Richmond.
There can be no reconciliation with masters as long as they are masters. No reconciliation as long as men are in prison. There can be no communication between the masters and the slaves until masters no longer exist as masters, are no longer present as masters. The Christian task is to rebel against all masters, destroying their pretensions to authority and ridiculing the symbols of power. However, it must be remembered that oppressors never take kindly to those who question their authority. They do not like thugs and bums, people who disregard their power, and they will try to silence them any way they can. But if we believe that our humanity transcends them and is not dependent upon their goodwill, then we can fight against them, even though it may mean death.
That was Dr. James Cone speaking in 1971. And correction, he died at the age of 79. His groundbreaking books include Black Theology and Black Power, published in 1969, A Black Theology of Liberation, published in 1970, Martin and Malcolm and America, A Dream or a Nightmare, and The God of the Oppressed, and as well as The Cross and the Lynching Tree, which he published in 2011. He had also just completed a forthcoming memoir titled Said I Wasn't Gonna Tell Nobody. This is Dr. James Cone speaking at Union Theological Seminary in 2016.
If I were going to write an authentic Black liberation theology, I had to let the suffering of Black people speak in and through my theology. My theology came out of the Black experience of slavery, segregation, and lynching, and not from white American and European theologies that I studied in graduate school. Black liberation theology emerged out of the civil rights and Black power movements, symbolized in the life and work of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X.
Dr. Cone joined the faculty of Union Theological Seminary here in New York in 1969. He was at the seminary, he was at Union Theological for a half a century. He was named the Bill and Judith Moyers Distinguished Professor of Systematic Theology in 2017. Through his work and in the classroom, he inspired generations of scholars, professors, pastors, and activists to work to dismantle white supremacy and help give birth to the womanist theology and other liberation theologies. Professor Cornel West called him the greatest liberation theologian to emerge in the American empire, and he never sold out, West said. One of Dr. Cone's students made national headlines during the 2008 presidential election when then Barack Obama's pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, made controversial comments on race and other issues. Well, for more, we're joined by three guests. Here in New York, the Reverend Dr. Serene Jones is with us, president of Union Theological Seminary, as well as Dr. Kelly Brown Douglas, dean of the Episcopal Divinity School and professor at Union Theological Seminary, a former student of Dr. Cone. And in Atlanta, Georgia, we're joined by another former student, Reverend Dr. Raphael Warnock, who serves as senior pastor of the Ebenezer Baptist Church there, which was the spiritual home of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Professor Warnock, Dr. Warnock is also the chair of the New Georgia Project, author of The Divided Mind of the Black Church, Theology, Piety, and Public Witness, and on the board of Union Theological Seminary. We all welcome you all to Democracy Now! Our condolences. I wanted to begin with the Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown Douglas. You work so closely with Dr. Cone at Union Theological. You're his student. It's hard to even talk about him in the past tense.
Yes, that's right.
Talk about his legacy, what he meant to you, and what he meant to this country.
Yes, I think that his legacy is very hard to really quantify because it will be a very long legacy that will cross generations because Dr. Cone always said that he didn't want disciples. He didn't want students who would come and simply imitate his work and simply carry on the paradigms that he created. He urged us always to find our own voice. And he wanted us to bring our own perspectives, not simply to our understanding of God, but to our understanding of the complexity of injustice so that we could understand more God, the meaning of God's justice and the work that we had to do. So he wanted committed students. And so he opened the space for us to indeed find our own theological voice. He wanted students who were committed to the work of justice, which is God's work. He always understood that and gave us a place, first of all, to study at a time where we would not be able to find many places to do our work and to do our theology and to do the theology that meant something to us. As we were there, as I said, he encouraged us to critique his work and to move beyond it. And so he opened the space for the emergence of new theologies, new theological voices, hence womanist theology, black women. There weren't many places for black women to do work in the early 70s, et cetera. When I went to Union, he provided us that opportunity. And so his legacy looms large because he has inspired a generation of black and other liberation theologians.
And Dr. Serene Jones, you're the president of Union Theological. His impact on the on Union itself and on Christian theology generally.
Well, his impact on Union is inestimable. Imagine a single powerful voice showing up in classrooms and preaching in the pulpit for 50 years. 50 years in one place. He won't walk our halls anymore. His voice won't be heard in our classrooms. And it wasn't just any voice. It was the voice of a man whose deep faith was manifest in this forceful, fierce commitment to the liberation of black people and the liberation of people everywhere. That can't be replicated. But as Dr. Douglas said, for Jim, the best replication was for new generations of students to find that commitment to speaking on behalf and with and in solidarity beside the oppressed of the world in the face of grave injustice.
And the impact that he'd had on Christian theology in general,
well,
in the United States?
So his impact on Christian theology, I read Jim Cone in 1981 in my first class in seminary just a few years ago. It was the first theological book I read in seminary, and here I was reading a man who, in a sense, sent a torpedo right at the heart of the whiteness of Christian theology as it had been manifest in churches in the United States since the beginning, and supported chattel slavery and Jim Crow. And he said no. He said, God is not white. God is not even no color. God is black. And Jesus is black. And Jesus seeks the empowerment of black people and that the masters need to walk away.
I wanted to go for a minute to Jim Cone in his own words. Reverend Dr. Cone's 2011 book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, he called The Crucifixion of Jesus a First Century Lynching. I want to turn to Dr. James Cone being interviewed by Bill Moyers in 2007.
The lynching tree interprets the cross. It keeps the cross out of the hands of those who are dominant. Nobody who is lynching anybody can understand the cross. That's why it's so important to place the cross and the lynching tree together. Because the cross, the crucifixion, was analogous to a first century lynching. In fact, biblical scholars, when they want to describe what was happening to Jesus, many of them said it was a lynching. And all I want to suggest is if American Christians say they want to identify with that cross, they have to see the cross as a lynching. Anytime your empathy, your solidarity is with the little people, you're with the cross. If you identify with the lynchers, then no, you can't understand what's happening. That in the sense of resistance, what resistance means for helpless people. Power in the powerless is not something that we are accustomed to listening to and understand. It's not a part of our historical experience. America always wants to think it's going to win everything. Well, black people have a history in which we didn't win. We did not win. See, our resistance is a resistance against the odds. That's why we can understand the cross.
James Cone, father of black liberation theology, 1939-2018. James Cone was a small man, as in short in stature, but he was great in mind as a theologian and scholar. And after the emergence of the Black Freedom Movement during the 1960s, he shocked the world with his seminal work, Black Theology, where he wrote, God is black. Professor Cohn wasn't the first to say that. For decades before he did so, scholar Arthur Huff Fawcett wrote Black Gods of the Metropolis, published originally in 1944, detailing black religious movements in black ghettos in the North. Professor Cohn's work, enlightened by the black freedom movement, led him to write, God is black. There is no place in black theology for a colorless God in a society where human beings suffer precisely because of their color. The blackness of God means that God has made the oppressed condition God's own condition. James Hal Cohn, author A Black Theology of Liberation. Cohn's ideas came to fruition in black Christian nationalist communities across America who saw the divine at work in the black freedom movement. Cohn's brilliance was matched by his boldness, and his writing was both liberating and revelatory. In 1991, Cohn published Malcolm and Martin in America, which examined the ideas of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X and their impacts on America. In writing of these two spiritual leaders and their respective ways of leadership, Cohn wrote, anger and humor are like the left and right arm. They complement each other. Anger empowers the poor to declare their uncompromising opposition to oppression, and humor prevents them from being consumed by their fury. James Cohn, Malcolm and Martin in America. James H. Cohn, born in Fordyce, Arkansas, 1939, returns to his ancestors after a shimmering career as a black scholar from imprisoned nation. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade, and for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Saturday, May 5th, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly compensatory call-in. Dial in if you have thoughts, commentary on any of the news clips that we just heard. If you have suggestions about replacing white supremacy with justice, the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Before we get to the folks who dialed in, a few announcements. First of all, we are listener-supported counter-racist radio. Invest if you think the broadcast is constructive. You can visit my blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. When you hit the blog, PayPal button is in the top right corner. Thanks to all of the folks who have invested. Again, I hope the cows has helped listeners, non-white listeners, get an accurate understanding of what white supremacy racism is and how it works. If you're not into PayPal, you can hit, you can support by just nabbing items from my Amazon wish list. It's linked on my blog right below the PayPal button. You can go to Amazon.com. It's under Gus T. Renegade. I tweeted it, Facebooked it, all that as well. Huge thanks to all the folks who have nabbed items over the past decade, basically. Many thanks. Again, I hope the program has been, continues to be worthy of your time and energy. A few comments I wanted to also get in. As I was constructing the compensatory call-in, the audio clips that we listened to just now, I had no idea until today, part of the research in compiling what we just heard, I had no idea that R&B crooner R. Kelly did a remix of Kanye West's Flashing Lights. Anybody out there for their Kanye West trivia? This, I guess they were not in the studio at the same time, but R. Kelly went and did this and just added his vocals to Kanye's song, and specifically on the song seemed to take time to respond to allegations of his sexual misconduct and possible drug use. I have no problem admitting I cracked up laughing because I did not know that he had done this song, and cracked up laughing. I howled and I wasted a lot of time. I didn't even have time to waste, but wow. That R. Kelly is something. That being said, I can even pause if you want a moment in Gus T. I actually think R. Kelly may have done quite a bit of these accusations because Gus T. met R. Kelly on my first trip to Chicago. And I was younger at the time. We were with teenage girls, and he spent a lot of time chatting it up with the teenage girls that I was with while I was in Chicago. So based on a few things, including my personal experience meeting R. Kelly, I absolutely think he could have done exactly what he has been accused of doing. And I still think it is a massive act of white supremacy racism. They just go right from Bill Cosby to R. Kelly. And I'm still waiting for somebody, all of these whites that I've seen, white men being accused and all this rubbish with Me Too. I haven't seen any convictions. My man that they kicked, Kevin Spacey, they kicked him off a House of Cards. Where are the handcuffs? Wasn't he raping underage too and everything? I didn't see him go to court. They just kicked him off the show. He's got all his money and is chilling. If he never did another film, he is straight. I haven't seen that with Bill Cosby, R. Kelly. Very different standard. Maybe I'm just ignorant. Anyway, that DNA segment I thought was extraordinarily important. Extraordinarily. I have never been an advocate, supporter, have never encouraged anyone to support in any of the DNA stuff. And I think they've been so slick and sophisticated. They've had all these shows, Dr. Skip Lewis Gates, cowbell, doing all that DNA stuff and having everybody come on. Oh, yeah, this is so great. I wouldn't encourage you to participate in any of that. And if you need a book, Dorothy Roberts, I'm a huge fan of her work. She's been on the program 3 times. The third time she was here, we discussed her book, Fatal Invention, where she talks about that exactly. And even targeting of black people with that DNA rubbish. Oh, you enslaved Negroes, we beat you down and you don't know who your great grandfather is. Come on and give us a few dollars, give us a few nickels, and we'll do your DNA test and then sell your data to whomever, and then we'll just go through, sell our data and say, oh yeah, we'll just connect all of our crimes, go through and find all the Negroes who submitted their DNA, and boop, we clear all the crimes that we got that cases haven't been closed. Boop, we take care of all that right now. Super important segment, I thought. The piece on the DC scholars, these black females, black teenage girls, where they were in the NASA competition, that segment specifically where they talked about haters. They didn't use the term racists. That's what these people would be who said, oh no, these Negroes trying to be scientists and make clean water. We don't want to support that. Get them out of here. Let's go on the internet. Not terrorists, not racists, haters. I thought that was extraordinarily sloppy journalism because if these had been some white gay students, I don't think it would have been haters. It would have been bullies. They would have had substantially different language, even the slang of haters. That's not what I'm talking about. And the fact that this was a NASA, I thought NASA was a federal program. Maybe I'm ignorant again. I thought that was a federal program. Why isn't this being pursued more seriously? And particularly if these quote unquote haters, I didn't understand from the report if they were actually hacking into the system to try to disrupt the voting process or if it was just they were doing whatever slanderous abuse online. I didn't understand it fully, but I mean, if there was a hacking attempt to disrupt the computer process of what was happening with the voting, why isn't this being pursued? Why aren't they being prosecuted? System of racism, white supremacy. The segment about the black female in California where they were going to this race soldier, 80-year-old race soldier. He was going to the opera and he got upset because a black female took his parking space and commenced to violently attack her. I was almost a little reluctant because that's the way that they like to portray white supremacy racism, that we just have to wait about 5 minutes for him to die and this problem will be solved. We just got to get him out of here. If we can get him and Bill O'Reilly and Donald Trump, we can just hang on until they die. Everything will be all right. And nothing could be further from the truth. But the public space aspect of that, I just talked about my situation in the yoga class. It wasn't advertised with as much notice, so some people didn't get to hear it live, but it's in the archives. I just talked about my situation being kicked in the head by a white woman, race soldier, at yoga class a few days back. And I said during that broadcast, you know, it's really important in terms of us victims of white supremacy being alert, mindful, because I think there are going to be more of these types of incidents, unfortunately. And even an 80-year-old over something that simple, a parking space, an 80-year-old with a cane, he's about two steps from, you know, not being on the planet in his current form anymore. And he's ready to battle a black female over a parking space. I mean, that's what we have. And that's why I encouraged. I'm of the opinion, exit. That's one. If they got security, go get security. Try to get out of those situations as quick as possible. Again, whites, they rally any of those situations. I talked about in my situation, a random white stranger could see that. I could easily see the situation being, oh my God, he's probably a veteran. He probably served in the Korean War. What are you doing beating up on that? I could easily see the situation playing out that way. I'm not saying she did anything incorrect. I'm just saying she's a victim. She was totally right to defend herself. I'm just saying that it's very, very easy in the system of racism, white supremacy, and these type of incidents where you didn't have a plan for counterviolence. It is very, very easy. I've said it for years, in a matter of seconds even, for things to go explosively wrong and not in your favor. That is the system of white supremacy. And I can even weave right back in. All we talk about now is yoga. Give you two yoga stories. And I can pause and pivot back to my wish list. Thanks to the listeners for supporting my yoga practice. I have a great yoga mat and I have great yoga blocks. I had them on my wish list and got them immediately and have been using them daily. I used them twice today. I took two classes. I was at class earlier. I mentioned I have yoga blocks. For people who don't know, yoga is they have blocks. You can use them for a variety of things. You can lie on them, use them for support. Lots of things as you practice. They're very helpful. I have cork yoga blocks. For people who do yoga, that's a slight step up, right? On the planet. That's not even give a metaphor. That is, these are considered better quality, generally speaking, blocks. Like they have the foam blocks and other types that, you know, are not as sturdy, won't last as long. Cork blocks generally are considered better quality. I bring my own cork blocks to class. Some studios have cork blocks, but most do not. I bring my own cork blocks to class. That stands out. I'm in class. Well, I just finished class. I'm going upstairs carrying my yoga mat and my cork yoga blocks. If anybody takes yoga, you'd recognize them immediately. Like, oh, okay, gotcha. This nigger's stepping up. He's got cork blocks. I'm going up the stairs to the locker room, and I'm coming around the corner. White woman comes out, and her eyes are enormous. Pupils dilate, and she's, oh my gosh, you can see that she's clearly startled. And she says, I thought you were carrying bricks. She's like, oh my God. And I'm looking at her like, in my mind, I'm just processing like, bricks? Really? Why would I be walking through a yoga studio with bricks? She calms herself. Oh, those are yoga blocks. Yes, I got it. Oh, okay. And then she goes on. I didn't say anything. I was just, she didn't ask a question. She just was startled. Ooh, Nigra with a brick. Oh, yoga block. And then she kept walking. As I continued, I thought, wow. Again, being in these public spaces, I thought, wow, that'll be the headline. Menacing Negro, because I did wear my shirt, my counter-racist t-shirt. Please respect me like a white person. That'll be the headline in the newspaper. Menacing Negro with militant radio broadcast gunned down at yoga studio. Threatening white patrons with brick. Thought he had a weapon. Turned out to just be a yoga block. What was the nigger doing with a cork yoga block anyway? I think this was the same nigger that was out menacing neighbors with a toothbrush about a year ago. I was thinking in my mind, that is what's going to be the headline for having cork yoga blocks at class. Anyway, again, just be cautious in public spaces. Things can get bad quickly. If you're a black person, you're about 5 seconds from being accused of something anyway. So just be mindful. That's unfortunate that we have to exist this way, but that is the system of white supremacy, racism. Even one more public space story. This was not yoga. This was, dang it, you just want a random one. I was just trying to cross the street, literally, right in front of my residence, just trying to cross the street. Beautiful day, didn't have a program. In fact, I was trying to be a Seattle hipster. I've told you before, my temporary flood residence still hanging out with no end date in sight. I'm hanging out. They say, hey, we don't want to hear you moping and complaining about being a flood victim. Take advantage. You're in a nice spot. The insurance people put you in a nice location. Go enjoy. You're, you know, next to about 8 billion grocery stores and all these other amenities. Take advantage. Have fun. So I say, okay, it's warming now. Nice weather. There are about 5 parks within a like 10 block radius of my residence. Might even be smaller radius than that. At least five parks that I know of. I say I'll take a stroll and visit some of the parks. I just tried to cross the street, and this street, I've crossed it dozens and dozens of times. People cross the street all. This is a residential area. Be very specific. There's a hospital yards from my residence. There are multiple schools yards from my residence. Stop. This is a residential area. This is not put your foot on the gas and gun through. People cross this at the intersection here all the time. And generally the response is cars stop and allow pedestrians to cross. I've said before, Seattle is a very walker friendly city. I'm trying to cross the street. The first car does stop. The second car, white woman, suspected race soldier. She does not stop. She slows and looks at me with an attitude as though, why are you crossing the street, nigga? I should run you down. And I'm looking at her like, what in the world? Like, I'm just trying to cross the street. She gives me a nasty look, drives around me as opposed to stopping, and speeds off as it looks like she's saying, probably cursing me in her vehicle. I'm stunned at being victimized, terrorized. I turn, the woman behind me looks like, yeah, nigga, move. And she just drives off. She doesn't say nigga, but she just looks angry and drives off. And I'm like, wow, crossing the street? Did I do something wrong crossing the street? Like, whoo, just trying to go out to enjoy a little sunshine in the park. Huge reason why I'm curmudgeon, misanthrope. I don't go out. I don't hang out. Let me just see if I can get to my yoga class and not be terrorized, molested, and get back safely. That is about as much as I'm looking to do. I get safely across the street. I'm still traumatized from all this. I take about 10 steps. And I'm just like, this is the system of white supremacy. For I assume this is not just Gus's experience, that this is black people all over the world. They have studies on this where black people, it takes them longer to cross the street. Racists are nasty and don't want to stop. I assume this is black people's experience worldwide. I take 10 steps. There's a white woman, suspected racist. She has grocery bags. We'll say she's carrying what looks like maybe 3 grocery bags in each hand. A random racist stranger, this white guy doesn't know her, stops in the middle of the road. It's, oh, ma'am, do you need any help? She says, oh, no, I got it. I can't even get across the street and you have random strangers. They are willing to stop and just help out. I cannot bear to see a white woman suffer. She takes 5 steps and her white whatever, husband, brother, father, whatever, race soldier, companion, comes over, swoops in, grabs the groceries, they go. System of white supremacy, make it plain in about 30 seconds. You had better hope and pray whites allow you to cross the street while they are looking to help and be great citizens and help out any random white stranger at all. No inconvenience, no problem. Don't want to see a fellow member of the race suffer. Last thing I will get in, metaphors. This broadcast, I ask specifically about no metaphors. The tacky NPR Rachel Martin in that segment about R. Kelly. The meta, what's that metaphor about? This is a, I was furious when Ivy talks about being furious. I wasn't angry like, oh, I'm gonna shut it off. But wow, I cannot believe the audacity of a white woman to act like, oh, I don't know what all this lynching is about. I'll have to get a black person to explain it. For me, no, to say, oh, well, I'm just doing my job as a journalist and we brought him here as the quote unquote expert. Absolutely not. Any format where a white person is talking, where they get to pretend that they're ignorant and they don't know about the history of lynching and why a black person, Bill Cosby, Clarence Thomas, R. Kelly, anybody you want to insert name, anybody would have questions about being accused of sexual misconduct. And if you need additional literature, Picking Cotton, I've talked about that book many times over the year, written by Matthew Cotton, who was falsely convicted of rape, later exonerated after he spent a decade in prison unjustly, over a decade actually, unjustly, was exonerated and then turned around and wrote a book with his false, the white woman who falsely identified him and had him in prison for so long. They wrote a book together. That's a great one. Dr. Curry has talked about this on the program before and cited excellent research about the numbers of black males who are falsely convicted for rape and all the time that they spend in greater confinement. Vox did a great report where they said, judging from exonerations, a black prisoner serving time for sexual assault is 3.5 times more likely to be innocent than a white sexual assault convict. The major cause for this huge racial disparity appears to be the high danger of mistaken eyewitness identification by white victims in violent crimes with black assailants. And I would just say racism, white supremacy, but lots of literature. We've talked about that before, and I just thought that was really and then they had the black male speaker in that NPR segment on R. Kelly. He came back and says, yeah, when they make this accusation, Bill Cosby's attorney or his wife, when they say that this is some sort of high-tech lynching, it muddies everything. They come back and then they interrogate the one metaphor and then come back and give another metaphor that, in my opinion, reinforces the system of white supremacy. It muddies everything. Again, anything that is associating darkness, blackness with something bad, something vile, something incorrect, with a lack of understanding, because they say Negroes don't know anything. Muddied, darkened, we don't understand. Now we don't have clarity about what's happening with these cases. The reason we don't have clarity is the system of racism, white supremacy. Make it plain. No metaphors for the broadcast if we could be explicit with what we want to say. Racists have done a great job spreading confusion just like that. With metaphors, they do this on a regular basis. Also, they frequently will compare two entities and say these are identical, exact same thing. And often that's not the case at all. We victims, we've been exposed to this conduct for centuries. And many of us, Gus T included, we are still learning. Sometimes we have not come to conclusions on specific topics, and so we don't have logic to articulate our views. Sometimes we'll substitute a metaphor in its place, and often it makes things way worse. It adds confusion. If we could just be explicit, direct, and take a moment to think about what it is we want to say so that we are not just inserting a metaphor. I will prompt about that. Thank you kindly. We can take 5 minutes to share whatever thoughts, observations you have. That would be great. That'll give everyone a chance to speak at least once. Once everyone's spoken one time, we should have time for folks to make additional comments or questions. If you are in a noisy environment, if you could use your mute button, that would be super appreciated. We do not need to hear all of the random sound ambiance that you have. If you have the TV on or other people in the environment talking, just make your commentary. And then if you can mute your line, that would preserve the quality of the broadcast and we won't have to fight over any distortion. Much obliged. With that, we'll go ahead and get to the folks who dialed in. First few folks, number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard? May I be heard? I'll wait. Okay. Thank you, Emmy. This is Red in Ohio. I actually don't have that much commentary today, but I definitely wanted to make a comment about the R. Kelly segment, at least, or starting off. I definitely feel like and I hope this is not a metaphor, but it seems like Black people, and I know I definitely wasn't prepared, so I'm, you know, definitely one of the first ones to say, you know, I wasn't prepared, but I never thought of white women using the Me Too and the Time's Up and all this other nonsense, this takeover that they have formulated to, you know, first accuse white men, but then to make sure that they prosecute Black males, which I don't know. It's definitely just disgusting to me, if nothing else. But I understand, like, I've never met R. Kelly, so I don't have a comment on whether, you know, he has done some of the crimes or not. But when they spoke about the whole sex cult, it made me think about the racist who just recently died, the Hugh Hefner. I felt like, you know, with the Playboy Mansion, that seemed like that was a highly publicized sex cult. And so I'm not understanding why, you know, what the whole sex cult has to do with it. I agree with the segment about exercising helps depression. I know I've suffered from depression since I was probably about 6 years old. So I know when I started to not only just try to focus more on racism, learning how to counter racism, white supremacy, but also exercising, I know it has definitely helped. I went through different types of medications. That was the main thing that doctors want to prescribe, either speak to someone or take medication, but not necessarily exercise. The only time that exercise would even come up is, oh, well, now you're overweight, you need to exercise to lose the weight, but not to help with the depression. And I guess there was one other thing that I feel like I was going to say, something about how it kind of, I don't want to say I get like as angry as Ivy, but it does kind of upset me how, you know, everything, you know, racism of Black people are being oppressed through racism. It's not quite racism, it's stupid, but with white women and rape, you know, it's you know, it's comparable to terrorism. So I'm definitely going to make sure, if I get the opportunity to ask white women, or if this subject comes up, to make sure that it is known that, you know, rape is not worse than racism. And I'll meet my line. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Yes, ma'am. Greatest rapists on the planet. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Emmy, thank you for your patience.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Fantastic. Greetings, beautiful people. I really wanted to comment really on the exercise clip, just because I have come to the conclusion that exercise is the thing that we can actually do that is constructive in every way, shape, and form that will help us to actually become more codified. I know that, you know, of course, practice our code, develop a code actually. First, learn about it, then develop your own code, then practice your code, and keep, you know, just reformulating your code and working on your code and building your code so that you can just be a really, truly codified person. However, some people kind of do struggle with the way the clip had mentioned, with getting started. And I think one of the things that we don't talk about a lot, and I'm not necessarily saying on the couch, but just in general conversation, is the benefit of structure and what structure can do to help individuals keep a grasp on reality and actually attain something in the future, whether it's a goal or even project themselves into the future, like think into the future, because we have a framework with which to operate. And if something traumatic happens or there's a stressful event, we're able to kind of get back to where we need to be if we have a structure. But when we don't have a structure, or we have a maladaptive structure that might involve, you know, alcohol or drug use or whatever, it becomes much harder to heal and bounce back or to come back. So when you have a exercise regimen, whatever it is, even when you have that stressor or that traumatic event, and this is now your habit, 21 days, they say. I go with the 21 days, but the internet might tell you a bunch of other days, how long it takes to develop a new habit, but I go with the 21. Anyway, and then once you have that habit, even if you have that traumatic experience or stressor, then you know, you can maybe skip a couple of days, but by the third, fourth, fifth day, your body actually begins to say, hey, remember we had that thing going that I really, really liked, so can we get back to it? And that can actually help. And I think that's how it helps. And it also helps by establishing a structure. So then you do something early in the morning or you have a certain time that you do it. Then you begin to have a different relationship with time. Having a different relationship with time makes you manage your time better, become more organized. Then you start seeing the benefits. Then you want to eat better. Then when you feel better, you don't do things or you don't feel good. And it's just, it has a cascading effect. And so I maintain, and I have come to the conclusion that if you don't know how to even begin anything, like even if it's a goal that has nothing to do with racism, white supremacy, exercise. It will clear your mind. The answers can come. Sometimes you can get into a zone and then you can just, like, the idea will come or take this step. You meet new people if you're into that. I'm not really into meeting people where I work out just because I like that to be a personal thing. But if, you know, you might want to meet people, you might meet people where you work out, or whatever it is that you do. So anyway, not to mention any of the positive cellular effects, which I won't even really get into. And so, like, they didn't talk about it in the clip, but I guess I just have to, like, your cells, like, individually really like it when you work out. Like, it's just good all the way. I cannot stress it enough that, like, work out, and it's hard at first, but just get with it, stick with it, and just do it. And if you're not really sure, I think one thing, like, if you don't have a gym membership, I don't advocate spending your money wherever, but get you some type of fitness tracker, only because it helps you get your heart rate to manage, you know, track your heart rate. And that is very important because you do want to be in a cardio space for at least 30 to 45 minutes, at least, they say 3 to 5 times a week. I say 7 days a week, maybe 6 if you had like one day where you just couldn't make it. That's it. Just please work out. I think it will solve so many problems. Like, we should just be known as people who work out and who are fit and healthy and just solve problems all the time. The other thing I wanted to say is that I was listening to the clips and I just kept hearing Boondocks for like so many of the clips. I was like, this would have been a great time. Uncle Ruckus could have been played once. Rally with the R. Kelly thing could have been played once. Anyway, I don't know if you all watch Boondocks, but I thought it would have been funny, and I kind of heard it. So the other thing I wanted to comment on was, I might be kind of forgetting. So I got so caught up on the exercise thing. Here it is. I don't remember where I heard it. I think it was somewhere on one of the broadcasts. Unfortunately, I've kind of not been as present as I want to be just because my time is a little thin right now. But I heard someone say something about school and like it not being maybe the wisest choice because you take on a mountain load of debt and all that. And I'm not saying that that's not true. The only thing I wanted to say about schooling is there are young people who are about to enter college or are in college now that, or who are debating whether or not to go to college, that if you do math and science with a very specific goal at the end, if it's hard, it's supposed to be hard, and just make use of all the resources, but become one of those things where you get a certificate in the end, because that is technically a trade too. Dentistry is a trade. Pharmacy is a trade. I work as a tech. I've done it for almost like 10, 12 years. It's technically like a trade. Like, I have a certification for it. So even though you do, for instance, I know people who come from different backgrounds or like have no money essentially, went and became one of these like, you know, trades, whether it was like a pharmacist or a doctor or whatever. And even though they had the mountain of debt, they've already been able to take care of it. Like real life, tangible people that I talk to on a regular basis. So I would say that no, debt is not constructive, but if you are smart, you can work it and get to another level where you can make moves or you can do things financially that you wouldn't be able to do if you only had a trade like, you know, cars or pharmacy tech or something like that. Like, don't limit yourself and don't be afraid. White people and other people from like the rest of the world come here, do the same thing. They take on that mountain, they work it out, and next thing you know, they make 6 figures coming out and they're able to take care of it. So of course, you know, do your research, but just don't go and do what I did and get like a bachelor's in African American studies or gender, sexuality, women's studies and religious studies. That's what my first one is. That's a huge mistake. Don't do that. Don't do arts. Don't do philosophy, psychology, all that stuff. Math and science, where you get a job at the end. And that's what I wanted to say. So thank you all for listening.
Appreciate that, Emmy. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, everyone. As the other callers and yourself have expressed, exercising, quote-unquote working out, is a very constructive activity. It's probably, I would consider it to be a necessity. And my version of working out is cardio on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, lifting weights. And being that I probably am not going to be coaching this year, primarily because I take on one-fifth of a part of taking care of our mother, 90 years old. She is under the condition of what is called dementia. So it kind of like warrants someone to be there for her almost on a 24-hour basis. And family-wise, we actually hired a person to assist us during the daytime. Non-white black female, emphasize that. But working out is very important. It kind of like gives me, well, other than, you know, for health reasons, I can see it. It also builds your confidence. Can build your confidence. You know, amongst other things, DCS, quote unquote, mentoring program. Another session a day from 8:30 to around 4 o'clock. The feature of the program today, of the session today, was the documentary on Emmett Till, Emmett Lewis Till. The young fellows, they gave it their undivided attention because of this, of the association that this person who was brutally murdered was 14 years old. Of course, it was asked how many of you guys in here are 14 years old, and there are several 14-year-old boys who were in the group. You know, things went well today. Another progressive day as far as dealing with younger black males, most of them who do not have a quote unquote adult black male in the same living conditions with them. I would say out of 35, only two raised their hands when asked that question. So I wouldn't necessarily call it mentoring, but it's not my program. But nevertheless, it is a necessity that older, more experienced males should spend some time around the younger black males. Thank you.
Was that Keith Beauchamp's documentary, The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till?
I'm not sure on who put this one together, but it kind of went along the way of course, the great Mrs. Mamie Till. She was in it. Just about all of the central figures was in it, including that no good white woman that is still somewhere wandering around. You know, and if I just can't, I, that's a good question, but I do not know the answer right now. As far as they're concerned, it was actually, I actually saw it myself years ago, and when it came on, Ken Burns, the one that was done by Ken Burns. I think it was the one done by Ken Burns.
Hmm.
Okay. I think, because he had the same opening to his documentaries, and it had that thing where it showed the quote unquote American flag and a melody, some kind of melody. I just can't think of how it sounds. That is the beginning of his documentaries. So I suspect it's Ken Burns.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know if Ken Burns has done a documentary on Emmett Till, but okay.
I could be wrong.
I will investigate. I was thinking it might be Mr. Beauchamp just because he's been on the program and he did do a document. Uh-huh. I think that's it's pretty popular. But anyway, either way, excellent work. I'm glad to hear that you and Mr. Clark are continuing the effort. And exactly as you stated, it is extremely important, highly beneficial for everyone involved when older black males
yeah,
having time and talking about construct. Particularly, you get to talk directly and honestly about white supremacy, racism. I mean, woohoo! Could not get best thing in the in well, short of replacing white supremacy with justice. That is spectacular. So, high commendation, retired firefighter Mr. Clark was also on the program as well last year, and all the other folks who participated. That is excellent. Keep up that great work. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. The only comment I wanted to make, I hope the retired firefighter mom do well. That's all.
I second that.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Black Male Engineer calling. Just wanted to comment on some things and some observations I've seen over the week. I listened to the compensatory call-in, I believe, last week, and there was some debate about whether or not the earth is flat or round. I believe the earth is round. And I say this based on stuff I've studied in school and just books I know. There's a book called African Cultural Astronomy. If you are on the fence about the flat around earth, you should read that book. It goes in depth about how our whole time system, the 60 seconds, I mean the second, the hour, the year, that all comes straight out of Africa. Whole calendar system literally comes out of Africa, specifically Kenya. Then it was advanced thousands of years later when they went into Egypt. So that's something that if you're skeptical, you can read that. It was the book was made by a South African man, black man. So, yeah, that's a good resource. I had an incident at work where we went to a Caribbean restaurant, Jamaican restaurant, and my white coworkers were making a lot of snide remarks about Caribbean food. They were off, they have goat and oxtail and, they were making remarks about how it would be sick if they ate goat or oxtail, or they don't know if the food will be cooked right. And I just found that whole conversation interesting because, you know, these are the whites that will go and hunt and kill deer, raccoon, snake, elk. I remember we went on a trip last year for work, and they were offering elk jerky. And my white coworkers ate that. And I'm of the mind that elk, that's not a domesticated animal. I probably shouldn't be eating that. But goats, domesticated thousands of years. And for some reason, whites have an aversion to eating goats, but they'll eat deer and all these other weird animals that are wild, for lack of better terms. I found that was just an act of racism. Jamaican restaurant, clearly black. And I try to avoid going to lunch with my coworkers, but I have learned that whites have valuable information, and over food and alcohol is when a lot of that information will be revealed to you. And I've learned a lot about my job just sitting there, being quiet, listening to whites talk during lunch and when they're drinking. So if you can be codified, I would definitely try to be around your white coworkers when they're drinking and when they are engaging in food. And last, I wanted to talk about the debate about trades and liberal arts and STEM degrees. I used to be of the mind that STEM degrees were way more important than liberal arts degrees, but as I progressed over the years, I've realized that a lot of the problems Black people have cannot just be solved through technology and math, in terms of like certain quote unquote pathologies that certain groups of Black people might have globally. That's going to take psychologists, social workers, people who understand how humans interact with each other, sociologists. Amos Wilson, he famously said, and I'm paraphrasing, that you could take a Black person, give them the best education, make them the smartest doctor, but if they've been living in America, indoctrinated through white supremacy, everything they do will still benefit the white man. So at some point, the psychology of, you know, our people would have to change to see a benefit from math, science, and technology. And last, and just the last point, if you could look over to Africa and you could see the same issue, there's a massive brain drain. So you have all these educated Africans with PhDs, doctorates, masters. And if you actually look at who's doing a lot of research, you notice there are a lot of Africans doing research in Europe and in America, but that is not benefiting Africa. It's benefiting whites. So until the consciousness changes, I could see a situation where we have all these Black people who are scientists, doctors, engineers, lawyers, whatever, mathematicians, and everything they do still benefits whites. And I will end it there.
Wow. Appreciate that. The quote I just wanted to make my edit would be benefits white men and white women. Somehow the weeping white women get left out of the equation often. Workplace racism, Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, neutralizing workplace racism. Definitely a great place to be codified. That was phenomenal to hear, to codify your conduct. When you go out and information is easier to obtain over a meal and alcohol, are you sober?
Sir, I try to be sober. Always try to be sober. I was at a conference last week. Whites were drinking literally an hour after the conference ended. The conference was giving whites alcohol, selling them alcohol. It's ridiculous how much they drink. So, yes, I try to stay sober at all times when I'm around my coworkers.
Thursdays, workplace racism, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. With the commentary, I had such a chuckle. I have to mute my line too because I'm not a quiet listener. I do listen, but I'm not necessarily quiet. But I was chuckling quite loudly when the commentary came up about going to the Caribbean restaurant and they were making their tacky comments about the goat or whatever was offered on the menu. And I was remembering Mr. Steele, Ken Steele. He's been on, he might be here today. But before, we were talking about workplace racism, and he was saying that food might be a subject that, you know, can be discussed where whites won't be racist. And I think the time that he said that, I think about two or three people called in where there were racist incidents around food. And so now we've heard quite a few of them since then. But every time someone mentions a racist incident involving food, I remember Mr. Steele's comment. Anyway, I was thinking whites, they, anyone who has visited Cynical Africans content, cynicalafrican.com, the amount of bestiality, like, and goat raping that goes on and animal raping, period. I don't want to hear any comments about, oh, can't believe these savages are eating. Like, they collect. I mean, this is collective. It might not be them individually, but man, the bestiality and goat raping that has gone on. Come on. Come on. I don't want to hear anything about that. Whites just practice racism. Whites, dogs bark, birds chirp. White people practice racism, white supremacy. That's just what it is. Other folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have a hand up, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and caller. Gus, there was an article that I came across or that I noticed that it was a white woman, a suspected white supremacist. She, like, it was a cell phone video. I don't know if a white teenager or a black teenager made this, caught this on video, but it's a white teacher, like, standing on a desk, like, putting her feet or her foot on a black male student, like, standing up. I guess her explanation was she was trying to wake him up, and then you can see on the video, like, she's kind of, like, slapping him in the face, you know, like, pulling on his locks, and, you know, just putting a foot on him. And apparently this person is, as they phrased it, went into an early retirement. So I guess she has some longevity in the school. I couldn't remember what the school name is. I think it starts with a P. It's over in the Texas area, I believe. That's also in the education area. And I believe that the audio segment where the kid, I think, was autistic and he was being brutalized, attacked with a pen, I think stabbed 6 times. Like that really was not really appalling, but it shows that even when a black child has like a certain type of health deficiency, that white people in another context have a great respect for, they still practice racism, even if the person is black or the child is black. And these, it was another segment where I think it was, they were talking about the Stephon Clark and the private investigator. I think that's the word they used. It seemed like there was some debate, like they didn't want a certain person on the panel or who was reporting didn't want to agree with the details that the private investigator had about how the bullets, I guess, were lodged in him or how they were shot. I was trying to get some clarification on that as well. It may be that it's going against the police officers that, you know, they weren't really in fear. They just wanted to be violent with another black person. So they tend to use that as a form of codification to say that I was in fear, and teaching the non-white officers to say that I was in fear. And there was another case of a mistreatment on a black male, I think that was down here in Florida, who got kicked in the face. And another incident that was caught on camera, a lot of racial incidents, racist incidents caught on camera. There was a person in a restaurant, like he was with his wife, and the guy just blatantly, you know, he just told him directly, like, I don't like you. Now, this is a patron to a business, and he said, hey, you're going to have to get up. You're going to have to get out. Like, why do I have to get out? He said, I don't like you. Like, that's what the initial reasoning was. Like, what do you mean you don't like me? Like, and see, this is on camera, but I'm assuming the guy didn't know, the white person didn't know. Then he goes to get the black guy. I'm assuming is what they call a bouncer. Okay. to come to another black male to say, hey, you know, sometimes, and then he used the metaphor, you got to pick your battles. That's an incorrect comparison, because the violence is initiated on the victim. A battle is implying that it's two people who, you know, willfully decide to have a competition of some sort. So that's out of place. So that, like that, those metaphors definitely need to be examined. But the way he wanted to use another black person to come to another black person, to almost like it's trying to start a conflict, that was an extreme act of racism. And one last thing I wanted to mention was the I think the if anybody has seen the Martin sitcom, Martin Lawrence, I think they were supposed to do a redo of it, and just the anti-blackness, like I've been thinking about that with a lot of the TV shows. I think the reason that they're bringing it back is because of the insults. Because if you just look on like YouTube, they have like what they call montages of the repeated insults and the toxicity that Martin and Pam, you know, they're insulting, they're denigrating each other. And we really have taken enjoyment in that kind of entertainment. And I just wanted to mention that. And that's all I have to share. Thank you.
Wow. I am wounded. Like, I don't have to watch it. I guess you could put that up there with Black Panther. Martin, either version, the new one or the old one. But wow, I do not want to see that at all. And I am wounded even knowing that they are going to have that back in some sort of new form. That is just what the world needs in 2018. Martin. Wow. That's great reason the hashtag anti-blackness is used pretty consistently. That is a major, major product. The system of white supremacy mandates anti-blackness. Cannot have black people functioning with a high level of black self-respect. And I think exercise would definitely help with black self-respect. Oh, the segment about the student with autism, non-white student with autism in Washington, where the white terrorist stabbed him with a pen, called him a nigger and such. He does have a white parent.
Oh.
Still a victim of white supremacy, but just that, yes, that is critical information, in my opinion. Some people, you know, if you don't agree, that's fine too.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Other folks, appreciate that caller in Florida. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, if we've not heard from you at all, you should definitely go ahead and get your hand up. Please do not wait until the last few moments to decide that you want to speak. If we've not heard from you at all, go ahead and get a hand up. *61. Oh, the number, 641-715-3640 and the code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks we've not heard from.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, Imhundisi.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. As far as, what is that, exercising? Yeah, of course, that is extremely important. That and also training different martial arts. Jiu-jitsu is a really good sport. And it's whenever I was attacked recently, I mentioned before, being chased by those two white boys. In the neighboring state. If I had not been physically fit, I would not have been able to get out of that situation. But like I mentioned before, I was in sandals, and I was able to get away from them in sandals. But I practiced running even. I practiced running in sandals. Also practiced fighting in sandals. And then I practiced fighting. I might have broken my hand like a year ago, I'm not really sure, but it has some scar tissue. But, you know, I fight and I practice, I spar with different people in my city. And So, like, whenever I got into that situation with those white boys where he was calling me a nigger and telling me he was trying to fight me, and another white boy came and said that I had a gun. Well, anyway, I was not, like, I didn't think that I was going to die. I knew that that was a possibility. I knew that that was their intention. But I was very confident in my ability. That first one, I would have very easily taken out in a few moves. I would have killed that person. However, he was not planning to just fight me alone. He was planning to have another guy come with a gun. So that changes things up. And also, you know, you just have to be careful or make decisions on if you're going to, how far you're going to take it. You know, whatever your ability is, how far are you going to take it? What are going to be the repercussions? Are all the neighbors going to help? You know, these white people, makes it a lot different. You're not just fighting. I wasn't just had to consider fighting that one or those two white people. I had to consider fighting all the people in the cars, all the people in the houses, all their heavy artillery that I know that they have because I've been inside houses. I've been inside their houses. I know every white person has guns, and they have several guns. They have heavy artillery. I know it. And so, you know, just making those decisions is really important, and I'm trying to make the best decision. But being prepared physically is extremely important. And everything that white people do on this continent is illegal. Everything they do is criminal. They're not supposed to be here. It's an illegal act for them to be here. Thank you.
That is spectacular to hear that you also do your practicing in sandals, since you said you go out and do your walk sometimes in sandals, so that you, if you are attacked and have to be evasive or defend yourself, that you practice doing that in sandals as well. That is spectacular to hear folks that are practicing, training, codifying themselves. And absolutely, it is a lot to consider. I think we talked about that before. I know Dealey Fuller Jr. talked about that when he was talking about counter violence. That's a big part of his codification. But saying to have that in exactly what Imhan Dc said, to think about that, it likely might not just be one race soldier. It might be this other person in the vehicle. He might have a plan. She might have a plan. Might be random neighbors, whomever. All of these other whites might decide that they want to join as well. Opportunity to terrorize nigger. Yes, I'll join in. I don't even know anyone here, but yes, nigger beating, I'll join in. That could happen. So it's a lot to consider. And I think Mr. Fuller also recommends folks saying, hey, if I'm going to, even if it's self-defense, if I'm engaged in counter violence, I am prepared to dish out death and I am prepared to die right now, whatever the consequences, exactly as Imhan Dc said, to think of all that. That's why I said you just have to be mindful. And if you can, I think it's best try to get out of there. I think you said that too. Practice running in the sandals. Try to get out of there. That's what I was trying to do at the yoga studio. Try to get out because it just, I've seen so many times where it can go from a very small incident to total terrorism in a very short period of time. Do we have folks that we missed completely? Anyone that we've not heard from at all have commentary?
Hello, may I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm a first-time caller. I go by the name Mr. Agnostic.
Good to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you too as well, Gus, and Cal supporters. My comments for the white supremacists that were interfering with Michaela, India, and Bria that are part of the Washington, D.C. NASA thing. I forgot what it's called. But yeah, I voted for them starting April 27th, and then I voted for them again a few more times. I'm not surprised that their efforts were messed with by the white supremacists. First time I saw, they had about 71% of the votes. And then the next day that I voted, it was up to 79. That's about all I have to say.
I thought that clip was so, I appreciate it. First time caller, thank you so much for dialing in. Hope it's the program, the cows, worthy of your time and energy, sir. But I thought that that segment was so important for so many reasons, because one, they'll say, you know, why don't we have black people in the STEM programs? We got all these jobs in the tech industry and you niggers are just too dumb or you won't do it. And they make all these excuses. And it's, again, it's white supremacy racism that's stopping this in a variety of different ways like this. And I thought it was important as well, because they are doing, in my view, they are practicing counter racism. We need black people in STEM. We'll do it with zest. You're poisoning, they didn't say, white terrorists are poisoning our water. So we'll try and come up with a program to have clean water. I mean, wow. Dr. Welsing would be ecstatic. Like, she would be giving them the highest praise. And they come and terrorize. I mean, to be expected, but man, and they're in the DC area. Oh, it would be a great opportunity if someone there could slip them a copy of the ISIS papers. Better understand what happened to you from a fellow scientist.
I agree, especially if they plan to make a career in what they do.
Indeed. That would be phenomenal. If we have anybody people in the DC area, but anybody, I think that would be, man, take advantage if we could get those, because I mean, they're brilliant. Obviously, these are, you know, young geniuses, black geniuses, like, to get them a copy of the ISIS papers so that they can better understand what happened to them. I think that would be phenomenal. And I mean, that could pay huge dividends to have them at a young age get a better understanding of what racism, white supremacy is, how it works, and then they can just incorporate that as they proceed in their careers, their life, and as young scientists. See if we can get them a copy of the ISIS papers. I think that would be hugely constructive. Other folks, anybody we missed completely? Anybody that has a hand up that we've not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Trace Demania from North Carolina, and I just wanted to call because I know often when I listen to your program, I often hear you talk about if we've ever heard of any jokes told by racist suspects. So I had the opportunity to overhear a racist joke by a racist suspect and where I reside at. And so it goes like this. I hear him talking, I guess, on the phone. He's talking about, I visited the black communities on Facebook, and they were really like on an uproar about something. And I guess you know how they go into these black communities on Facebook, on social media, and they basically troll the groups, and you know just to see what we're doing. And I guess a lot of them, they pose as they're black or what have you, and just to keep some things stirred up. So then he says something about one of them said something about called a Mexican Pedro or something like that. And I just thought that was pretty telling of this individual, because, you know, he's like a very white identified looking Aryan, you might say, looking Caucasian. And, you know, I just find it to be very real funny. I mean, they would like, you know, how you always say how they just get off on making fun of us. And, they just laugh and they chuckle it up and they go into our communities and they do things to cause, like, to terrorize us and to see what we're doing and just make fun and joke. I mean, he just thought it was the funniest thing. Oh, yeah, it was really funny, wasn't it? And I just, you know, I just wanted to share that with you. And then I'll mute my line.
You said, what was it about Mexicans Pedro? They were calling Mexicans Pedro? Oh, she might have muted. I was just trying to, because I didn't.
Oh, no, no, no. Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, yeah. He said something about they call it the Mexican Pedro. I guess what they do, they act like they go into the black communities and go into our groups to be nosy and to keep some stuff stirred up. So he thought it was just the funniest thing, you know, and these are college students. And I'm going to tell you, because I live in a house with a bunch of them, and I have been terrorized since I've been here. I mean, I have been put through all kinds of really slide and terroristic little behaviors. And because I've been listening to your show, I've gained clarity based on what has been happening to me. Because if I hadn't been listening to your show, I might have just brushed it off as something else. But thanks to your show, I'm able to really like identify and say, yeah, you know what, this is exactly what it is. And I don't see, as you stated, I don't see how anything is going to change. I don't see any indication that anything is going to get better with the new generation coming up, because I am in the middle, and I get a chance to see this type of behaviors from them on a daily basis, and the terroristic, you know, slide, and them just like terrorizing and just having fun doing it. You know, and they just enjoy doing stuff like that. Just to like, oh, let's go over here and let's mess with the little niggers and see what they're doing in their community. Or let's just say something or do something, you know, to them just to see, you know, so we can have fun. Oh, and they'll just chuck it up. And it's fun to them. So, you know, I just wanted to let you know that everything that you've been saying is definitely, definitely true. Because I get a chance to go through this terroristic behaviors every, like, you know, I live around it. I'm right in the middle of it.
One of my favorite sayings. Thank you so much, Draftomania. What a great handle. But one of my favorite sayings from Mr. Fuller, I was going to say debate, but that's the incorrect term. A caller was didn't agree with his views on white supremacy racism, surprise. And he said, white people can show you better than I can tell you. And man, oh man, I say that frequently. I wish I said it more, because I just think it's one of the best ever. You don't have to accept anything that Gus T says. Just go out and observe the whites that are around you on a regular basis. Observe them with suspicion and see if they confirm or see if they inform your understanding of what it means to be white, what racism, white supremacy is, and racist jokes. Wow. Anyone else, if you overhear racist joke, please remember it. If you need to write it down and go ahead and call in, I always appreciate it. And I mean, that's significant in my view. If I heard it correctly, that these guys, racists, that they are spending their time, I don't know if they're doing it at work or in their free time, but if they're going to hang out and pretend to be black people and either terrorize the folks there or whatever, but this is their form of racist humor. That to me, it also harkens what they would call blackening up, when you would have white people doing blackface. It sounds similar to that in a digital format, very similar, where this white's Dr. Welsing, I think, talked about that as well with her theory of white genetic annihilation. The color envy seems to be manifested in that way as well. I think there's been some literature on that as well. But anywho, anybody else that we missed completely? Anybody that has not spoken at all? Do we nab everyone? Making sure we didn't miss anyone. If you are hanging out and think that you might have a comment, go ahead and get your hand up now, as opposed to waiting until the end of the broadcast. That is not, it is not constructive, not helpful. People wait until the last 5 minutes to then decide they have a question or a comment. So we have not missed anyone. Grant, I will assume that we got everyone. You should have time if you have a comment that you want to get in. Did anybody else have commentary that they wanted to add, even if you've already spoken?
Dr. Nelson had a theory called for that. I wish I knew what it was.
Didn't sound like she was speaking with us. So other folks, any other folks had comments that they wanted to make sure they got in? I know one that I wanted to make sure to get in. The people that emailed about the shirts, I think I got almost everybody. Some people wrote in later after I made the announcement that, oh, yes, we do have shirts available and you can drop me an email. I think I got almost everybody who emailed me about the T-shirts. I might have missed one or two people. I'm going to try to get them today. But moving forward from this point forward, if you are interested in getting a Cows T-shirt, unless there is an update, and I hope that there is not, you can email Cows Shirts, and it's capital COWS, cowsshirts@gmail.com. Email address again, cowsshirts, COWS, all capital letters, shirts. You can put shirts lowercase, cowsshirts@gmail.com. Cows Shirts, COWS, all capital letters, shirts@gmail.com. If you are interested in a shirt, if you drop an email there, you will get all of the information that you need to get a shirt. I think some folks have already gotten shirts who inquired in the last week or so. You do not need to email Gus T about the shirts at all. Cowsshirts@gmail.com. If you get confused and you need help, I can do it up. But I mean, I am not in the T-shirt business, so I would prefer not to be pestered. Cowsshirts@gmail.com. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to get in. Hope people.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Another thing I was thinking about, Gus, is the was there like a, because I heard the Kanye West snippets, like a lot of good lyrics, like excerpts from like those different songs. Was there a particular reason you chose those sound clips?
He was in the news quite a bit this week, unfortunately. In fact, if you want to contrast the situation in Oklahoma, I know it came up last week where the caller requested time and brought it up. I hadn't even heard of it. Last week, the two black males who were killed and dismembered in Oklahoma, I don't think that got very much attention at all last week or even still this week. In fact, the prosecutor in the case came out, even though they arrested quite a few whites, a white mother and her children, and quite a few folks got arrested for this. Whites got arrested for this. But he said, no, I don't think this was racism. Grizzly, though it may be, don't think this was racially motivated. Said that this week in court, the white prosecuting attorney. I don't think that got very much attention at all. News One and several other folks did reports saying that, hey, where's the coverage? We got all this to say about Bill Cosby and R. Kelly and all these other forms of criminality. What about this? A murder and dismemberment? I mean, wow. And you look at Kanye West, he was everywhere this week where all kinds of people, mainstream outlets, every 5 minutes, oh my goodness, Kanye West, and we're going to kill him and interrogate him. I mean, if anything, codification. Number one, I wished that more people invoked the code of he said what he said moving forward. Like, I don't have an opinion. I don't have a thought. I don't have an assessment. He said what he said. I think that is precisely why Mr. Fuller created that concept, so that we don't, because racists are phenomenal at that sort of thing, at getting us to engage in squabbles and arguments about what another victim of white supremacy said. And that's exactly what I saw a lot of this week. So I used a lot of different clips of Mr. West opining on racism over the years, just because that did get a lot of attention this week. And I thought listeners might have even brought that up voluntarily, but I was not going to invest any time to hear what Don Lemon, who's a victim of racism himself, I think he devoted time on CNN, like mainstream network, with all of the things that happened over this past week, mainstream time to talking about what did Kanye West have to say this week. I mean, the system of white supremacy, phenomenal at distracting us, particularly anti-blackness. Anti-blackness, that is mandatory in the system of white supremacy. But that was why I played the Kanye West clips, if you wanted a comprehensive response.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, because I have noticed that same phenomenon this week, like, you know, different victims, whether it's on social media or other associates that I have around me, I noticed that, and this is, of course, because of the white supremacists and the media industry. Like, all they have to do is just put out a story centering around whether it's Bill Cosby, then it goes to R. Kelly, Chris Brown. They even had an aspect of it this week where they, hey, well, Chris Brown, he came out and said something against Kanye. And then, you know, you have multiple amounts of black people posting what Chris Brown said. And then, see, everybody forgot about the victims who were killed at the Waffle House, or Mr. Cosby's wife. She came out and said things about the charges that happened or whatever. And it's just they are very skilled with how they report the news in a very racist way. But I agree with that. He said what he said, and definitely try and get that message out there to have us practice codification a lot better. And that's all I have.
Appreciate that caller in Florida. Ivy, did you have commentary that you wanted to share? You should be with us.
Yes, I do, but I just need a few more moments.
Oh, well, right on. While you're talking, we should be here on Tuesday. I'm trying to make sure I have my date. We should be here on Tuesday. A black filmmaker, he just did a documentary on police terrorism, white supremacy, racism. Should be this Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And I think we have our reschedule from this past week. We were supposed to have a white woman on the program, Anna Brown Griswold, to talk about her workshop on unpacking whiteness with yoga and meditation and white supremacy. Got rescheduled. I think she should be here Wednesday. Double check on that. But Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and then again Wednesday of this coming week. You can check the Facebook page, Black Talk Radio Network, for updates. And you can also drop an email if you get confused, untiljustice@gmail.com. Do you need more time, Ivy?
Probably about 20 more seconds.
Oh, for sure. Princess, did you have commentary? Princess, are you just listening, or did you have commentary?
Oh, hold on. I just got in the car. Give me about a minute.
She needs time, too. Everyone needs time to gather themselves. Oh, other announcement. It looks like I did not get one dissenting vote on Invisible Man. If you really didn't want to read it, you should have emailed by now. You got more than 24 hours to lodge your complaint, and no one griped. So that is the book that we will be reading, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. We will be picking up next week. We are in chapter 2. It is in my top 5. Not that I'm trying to solicit listeners, but wow. If people that have asked for things to read, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, although it is fiction, wow, I think you can learn quite a bit about racism, white supremacy. It also happens to be very well written. It's all about racism, white supremacy. There's police terror, Invisible Man, Ralph Ellison, Gus T's top 5 this Friday. We just started, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Very excited about continuing with the text. Let's see, we can go in order. Ivy, did you need more time?
I'm good now. Thanks so much, Gus. Greetings to you and greetings to all the callers on the line. I'm sorry, Gus, that you had to deal with these race soldiers trying to kill you on the road. you were right when you said that, you know, that the biggest rapists on the planet are racist. 57% of people accused of rape are white. 27% are black. 27% are black. And I can't remember the last time a white person was convicted of raping black people. I don't consider Daniel Holdsclaw white, and I think that's why he got the time that he got. And I think that the reason probably why they don't, like, convict white men of raping us is because, like, they are known for that with slavery, and that has been, you know, brought up so many times throughout history. A lot of times we revert back to that, and we bring that up a lot. I wanted to ask you, has any other guest besides Dr. Welsing and Mr. Fuller, has anyone been on the program more times than those two?
Pam, probably. I think both of those two have been on more than 24 times. Pam, I suspect, may have hung out with us more than two dozen times. So if not, she would probably be close. That'd be my guess. RacismWS.com, Trojan Horse Publications, always send great energy out to Pam. I'm still trying to get in touch with her.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I brought that up is because I appreciate the commentary from everyone, but especially the retired firefighter and Mr. Demery Ford, just, you know, older people. And I think even Big Victim is older because he called me a young person. Because, like, older people, like, we need you. Like, we, like your life experience, you have gone through things that we are going to go through. And even a retired firefighter, like, he's retired, and yet he participates in workplace racism to share his wisdom. And it's just been so incredibly just helpful. And the reason I bring up Dr. Welsing and Mr. Fuller, obviously, is for the same reason. But the fact that you've had them on the program so many times, like, we need the wisdom of older people, like, so bad. And so I just wanted to, you know, thank the older people for coming on here and helping us out and sharing, you know, your incredible wisdom. And that's all I have for now. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Appreciate that. Second that one as well. Elders can be very valuable resources. Absolutely. Princess, did you need more time to get yourself adjusted? Don't hurry on our account. We'll assume she needs... Oh, I forgot. I muted her line. How funny of me. Sorry about that. Did you need more time to get yourself adjusted?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Okay. Just let me know if there's any background noise, because I am driving. But good evening to everybody. I hadn't been able to call because just been going through a lot of stuff, a lot of workplace drama, and I just wanted to, I had every intention when I called last time to share the update after the tire slashing incident. Is that okay if I can share that?
Let's hear the update.
Okay. To make a long story short, the girl wound up quitting, although it's not entirely confirmed, because what everybody had saw that day, they fired two people. One of the persons that I initially had an issue with using the N-word, and I believe they did that as a sacrifice because at the time, before the other person who I suspected slashed my tire, when I had disclosed that she too was joining in and using the N-word around the store, they had to try and find justification in getting rid of her as well. So the other lady that I initially had a complaint with, she was getting ready to retire next month. They went on ahead and fired her, and it looked like they were getting ready to fire this other girl, but she wound up quitting once loss prevention and the DM came in that day. So, to make matters worse, when I came in and I had a meeting, they pulled me aside abruptly, so I didn't have time to flip on my recorder, but I have since recorded a whole lot of things, because we've just been having quite a few meetings. Basically, they had came at me as if I provoked this individual and that I basically was responsible for my own tires being slashed. No video footage has ever been looked at. The police tried to come by one weekend. They called me to get permission, and I told them, you know, that I wanted to get the stuff, but apparently the manager that was on duty, another person that I've had an issue with, had reported it to the DM, so he had came back to our store, and basically they drew up this document on the 13th, but they only just recently presented it to me to sign, and basically it was saying that I would not use the N-word or the B-word or the F-word or any other word or any other foul word, and it just went into this whole thing. But the problem was the fact that they're equating the N-word with the B-word. So I, you know, specifically asked him, well, what's the F-word? And he looked at me crazy, and I was just like, well, because I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. What is that? I don't know. And so he spelled it out, and I was like, oh. And I just basically told him that I would not be at liberty to sign it. And he asked me why, and I told him, I said, because I've been advised by my lawyer. So once I said that, you know, since then on, they've just been doing things to try and retaliate against me, as far as if something's off, you know, they're trying to pin it on me as if that and the other. So Monday, after an incident had happened over the weekend, I just decided that I'm going to go ahead and get the ball rolling. And first, I had already called around to speak to a lawyer, but they had told me that I need to first go ahead and file the complaint with the EEOC. So that's where I'm at right now. And so ever since I've done that, they must have been notified corporate directly, because it's just been a lot of buzz of activity and everybody acting strange. All of a sudden, they're trying to give me accolades, tell me how good of a job I'm doing, and just buckets and buckets of words. But I'm just trying to take one day at a time. And I've spoken to other people. The only reason why I spoke to other coworkers about the document, because it's just a plain drawn up letter. It's not a corporate letterhead or business letterhead or anything coming from HR. This is something that they have internally drawn up. No one else has been presented with this but me. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Princess. That is the tackiness of the system of white supremacy, where she told us before about her tires being slashed and there were co-workers saying nigger on the job and giving lame excuses as to why this is acceptable workplace behavior. And somehow we don't have the video footage from the tire incident to follow up with that, to figure out how I've been terrorized on the job and had my private property vandalized, terrorized. Don't have the video footage from that, strangely. And then they have made up a document, a contract that you're supposed to sign about all of these obscenities. Did the person, I guess they're no longer working there, the person that was saying nigger and all that, did they have to sign a contract? Do all of the employees have to sign?
No. I'm thinking they only drew it. I did a screenshot when I looked in the Word document. It was created on the 13th. I was in Gainesville covering another store location, And I came back on the 13th, and I immediately walked in the office in loss prevention, and the DM was there. So they basically wanted to talk to me about the fact that I put in my report to corporate that I requested to be transferred. He then tried to say that I apparently somehow I received a corporate complaint. And I questioned him on the legitimacy of that statement, and he tried to backtrack. It was like he was just trying to throw something out there to throw me off. And he was like, why is it wherever you go you have a problem? And I responded, I said, you know exactly why. I said, you transferred me unjustly from my original store when I transferred from New Orleans because you accused me of doing something that I didn't do. And that was the first time that I directly came out in front of him, as well as loss prevention, letting him know, you know, where I stood with that. And he was
basically
like,
well, wait a minute, with the document, because we pivoted away from the document portion. With the document specifically, and that's still just being in the question mode, that's what I would have been thinking, train of thought, in terms of is everyone going to be required to see this? That's another presentation. If they come with you with some sort of document and we need you to get a signature on this, requesting time, and I think that's even great, your statement. Just my attorney advised that can have a huge impact as well. We've talked about that many times on the broadcast. But again, workplace racism, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That might even be a good one to see what Mr. Fuller, Mr. Edward Williams has to say, because it seemed like this could end up being something that's long and protracted, and with the vehicle situation as well, just to see what their thoughts are, what might be some tips on the best way to proceed. If you want to give either of them a jingle, I'm sure they would be willing to help out with a suggestion or three.
Okay. Well, it was only presented to me. I've asked everyone. There was one other specific person that was presented with it, and they did sign it, but she gave her clarification on why she signed it, because she knew it was retaliation as well. But she said she didn't have any problems personally with it because she already knew what was going on. And this was after she realized that I had already accused. He came to me first. No one else was presented with this. I even asked the person that was working with me tonight, has she presented it? Because I've just been being tight-lipped. But when it came to that, I just wanted to ask to make sure. And she said, no, she's never seen that. No one has talked to her. She didn't even know the extent of what was going on, because she, this whole time, she's been in pharmacy.
I see. Okay. Well, give us the update if you're able to dial in on workplace racism. And as I said, Mr. Williams, Mr. Fuller, they might have some suggestions to be helpful in dealing with your situation. Let me double check our caller in the DMV area. Yes, ma'am, Princess, good to hear from you. Sorry you're having to deal with all that terrorism in the workplace, especially with your vehicle. I mean, that racist man, racist woman. Racist child. The caller in the DMV area, did you have commentary or a question, or are you just listening? Might just be listening. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to get in before we wrap up. Folks satisfied? Everybody got in all the things that they wanted to make sure they brought up?
I'm sorry, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Gus, I didn't quite hear what she had said about the shirt situation. Can you tell me again, if we had already previously sent you an email about ordering a shirt, do we need to send a subsequent email to that address that you specified?
I think for about 90% of people, it might even be higher than that, if you sent an email, particularly if it was earlier in the week when I first mentioned the t-shirts, if you sent an email then and I responded with the information, you can contact Dr. Trav to get your shirts. If you got that email and you contacted him, you should be good. If you did not engage in any of that, if you're, you know, just now hearing about it or interested in a shirt, all you have to do is email cowsshirts@gmail.com and you should be able to get the shirt within days. And it's cows, C-O-W-S, all in capital letters, and then shirts@gmail.com. If you send an email to that address, he should be able to hook it up with a t-shirt and all the information, mailing and all that good stuff within a matter of days.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
For sure. Any other folks? I'll make sure I get my comment in as well, since I mentioned Black Panther earlier. I have concluded, thanks to our caller in DMV area, someone we know, was talking about Black Panther and got me a great copy, two great copies of Black Panther, which I still have not watched. Anything that a sizable number of Black people like are really happy about, excited about, is probably going to be something that I'm suspicious of. The same code that I have for racists, if a huge number of whites are really excited about something and, yeah, this is great, I'm probably going to be really suspicious, if not repulsed about it. I unfortunately have the same stance, I think, about if a sizable number of Black people, because in the system of white supremacy, I think Dr. Welsing used to say 90, 95% of Black people do not understand what racism, white supremacy is, and how it works. I think that harkens back to the commentary we heard from one of our earlier callers about the late, great Dr. Amos Wilson and his commentary about you can educate a Black person and all of their talents will be used to further reinforce the system of white supremacy when that individual does not understand racism. So we miss anybody? Any final thoughts folks want to get? Just to make sure I'm clear in my thought, if you have a huge number of confused Black people that are all excited about whatever it happens to be, this time around it was Black Panther, last year, Get Out, whatever it happens to be, President Obama, whatever it happens to be, my code is I'm going to step back with suspicion. Perhaps, you know, that should be a part of your code too, but confusion is lethal. Anything else folks need to get in before we wrap up?
Gus, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
What role do you think, if any, counter violence play? Let me see. Am I using a metaphor if I'm saying what role something plays in something?
I don't think so.
Okay. So, yes. What role, if any, do you think counter violence plays in replacing white supremacy with justice? If you're comfortable with answering that question, because, you know, the races are listening and, you know, I don't want you to get any more trouble than you're already in.
Well, I would begin my response with the words of Mr. Nero, white people kill for fun. That being said, I think it's up to each and every individual victim of white supremacy to decide when and how, and, you know, if counterviolence will be a part of their code. I certainly advocate self-defense. I am not into nonviolence. I do not encourage non-white people, you know, if you're being attacked or beaten, to just accept that. I do say in the system of white supremacy, however, I would try to avoid, if you can, just because, as I started my response, white people kill for fun. I think it is very important to keep that in mind, even in situations where you have to resort to self-defense. The people that we are dealing with enjoy violence. I don't bump into most of the Black people that I know. They don't kill for fun. They do not engage in violence just for fun. I have unfortunately concluded that whites collectively, they look forward to mistreating Black people. That is a very different mentality that you're dealing with, even in self-defense. And particularly, as I said before, it probably is not going to just be one white person that you end up having to deal with if it comes to counterviolence. That, in my view, just makes this a situation. If I can avoid this, I want to try. That said, counterviolence has many non-white people have invoked counterviolence. I played, I think, a clip this evening. The Black female that got attacked at the parking lot in California invoked counterviolence. Many non-white people invoke counterviolence every day. It's been a part of racism, white supremacy for the duration, will continue to be. It's just up to each individual to decide when, where, how, if at all, counterviolence will be a part of their individual code. I'll begin how I started. I do think it's very important to keep in mind white people kill for fun. Did that answer the question?
It does somewhat. I'm just trying to understand how we can, you know, solve this problem with, you know, these very violent people. I hate to say this, but without getting rid of them, because they just, you know, that's how they operate, like, with violence. So it's like, how do you stop people from terrorizing you? How do you stop terrorists from terrorizing you without, you know, I guess war?
War is already being waged. I mean, it would just be, you know, how would you go about executing that plan if that's what you think needs to be done? How would you do that? I think, you know, that question has come up before. Thus far, no one has an answer for that. Even before you even get to that point, now, how would you identify all of the people that are classified as white? How many oops are you acceptable with? When I say oops, I thought this person was white, but they're not. How many of those are acceptable, or does that even matter? Those types of questions would have to be answered conclusively, and then how you implement all of that would have to be discussed. But again, white people kill for fun. I just don't see that mentality amongst most of the non-white people I see directed at whites.
Thank you.
Anything else folks wanted to make sure they got in?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, guys, one last question. On that audio segment with the about the young black girls, I believe, was there a question that was asked, like, what do you think is going to happen in the future? What should be done about this? Did that lady ask that question?
Do you think that question was being posed to the victims in that case? Who was the question being posed to?
I believe it was directed towards, was that one of the girls I was speaking about, I guess, like helping solve the water crisis or
right.
the water issue?
Right, right.
Because I'm wondering if she was asking, was she talking about, was she using the term haters? And you're correct, she didn't use the term racist. Like, was she referring to, like, the racism or, like, the water issue?
Oh, I thought she was talking about the racism issue. I might need to go back and double check. I mean, they're both racist issues, I guess. But I thought she was talking about the trolling racism component of it specifically, not the poisoning water component of it. I thought they were talking. Which part did you think she was talking about with that, or were you just not clear?
See, well, I'm thinking, I agree with you. I'm thinking there was a racism, because that is another pattern that I'm noticing too. Like with some of the interviews, whenever something that's happening that's racism, white supremacy, like they tend to ask the people who have been victimized, black people, like, well, what do you think should be done about this problem? What do you think should happen? Like, how should we solve this problem? I mean, that's more racism. Like, would you agree with that? That's them practicing racism again.
I would agree. One, going back to what I just said in responding to Ivy's question about, or what I said before I responded to her question about, you have a lot of confused victims. Whites, they already know we are very confused. So you're going to a confused person to ask them what they think should be done. They don't have to do that. They could just go and do that. They don't have to do all that questioning and going and ask black people, what do you think about this? They could just go and do. They could, in fact, they could go and produce justice, to be explicit, and this would be taken care of. We wouldn't have to ask you anything. The problem would just be solved and, you know, go on and, you know, get back to filtering water or whatever else you're going to do in your young scientific career. And they're talking to children that should not be minimized in this case. They're not just talking to victims. They're talking to children. So, yeah, I agree with that, that pattern of coming to ask Black people. Did we miss anyone else? Anybody else have a final comment they needed to get in before we conclude? Everybody satisfied?
I'm glad that I don't call the opioid, so-called opioid crisis. I don't call it that at all. I don't think it's a crisis at all that racists are dying. I call it the dog food epidemic. Just like, you know, you say crack epidemic. Crack is not what it is. It's cocaine, but you call it a street name. So heroin, a street name, call it dog food, the dog food epidemic. That's what it is. And that was it. I'll mute my line.
That report, when I hear about that now, I think of the report from, I guess it might have been a month or so back, that was saying that now there's this increase, huge increase in the number of Black opioid addicts. Now that's what I think about when I hear that, that, you know, that's typically what happens in the system of white supremacy, especially since some people were saying that they were seeing some evidence that this might be true, at least in some parts of this part of the world, the U.S. With that, I think we got everybody. We will call it a broadcast. Again, we should be here on Tuesday. Documentary film, Police Terrorism in this part of the world. If you have guest suggestions, gripes, feel free, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Do not email Gus about the t-shirts. Email cowsshirts@gmail.com. Cows, C-O-W-S, all in capital letters. shirts@gmail.com. If you are interested in the counter-racist t-shirt, please respect me like I am a white person. That's it. It's Cinco de Mayo. I didn't even know. It's, you know, on the West Coast. It's been my observation as someone who's lived on West Coast, East Coast in the U.S., Cinco de Mayo, as it's called, is a bigger deal on the West Coast. There's more time, resources, more talking about that, and more parties associated with that, at least my experience. I was not even thinking until I came out of yoga class and saw lots of whites with sombreros, and then I stopped at the grocery store to get watermelon, and they were getting limes, lots and lots and lots of limes. Oh yeah, I'm gonna make sure I stay in the house this evening. Whites, alcohol, lethal combination. You don't even have to be with them. They're out on the road and everything else. Might be a good evening to be in. Certainly a great time to be sober, in my opinion. Under the system of white supremacy, I know Dr. Welsing, Dr. Amos Wilson, many of the folks that we revere would strongly endorse, hey, let's take excellent care of our brain computers, our health, so we can think and make great decisions while war is being waged against us to solve this problem. Come up with great concepts that can eliminate racist man, racist woman, racist child permanently. Certainly, if you're going to be out and about in a vehicle, buckled up and sober, let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. Shouldn't be on your phone either. I feel like I should be saying that as well. I know quite a few non-white people who have been stopped and ticketed repeatedly for driving and texting or being on their phone and stuff. Again, just, you know, let's try to do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. They are looking for opportunities to practice racism, white supremacy against us. Let's be mindful of that as much as we can. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother. Problem.
A victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.